This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. Mm-hmm.
Sharon Lawson Bram, skid of a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Skid of a rinky do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I've wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pie. Watch your mouth, you scratchy Canadian.
That's a bit much. You, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
I think I want to have your baby.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening inside the PTVN studios. And of course, joining me as always, the man who I've seen walk through many a hospital hallway and come out just fine on the other end, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Welcome to episode 450 of the Gold Standard. Halfway, you know it's coming, halfway. Five bills. We haven't even broached the surface of that yet.
Well, middle of the year.
Don't worry about it. Next Memorial Day.
450 already. That is that's yep. Quite the hike we've taken so far here.
Yes, we have, sir. It has been an honor and a privilege. And what would episode 450 be without a show that'll probably take 3 hours to do yes, tonight? Because, but we got a great guest tonight. Congrats are in order to our usual third member mm-hmm. of the Gold Dust Trio, correct, sir?
Yeah, Mr. Kelly Nelson was indeed, gave away his hand in marriage this past weekend. Yeah. His beautiful bride is him, you know, they're relaxing. I think the wedding was yesterday, actually, so he gave him the night off to, you know, relax and kick back a little bit. But Kelly will be back with us in a couple weeks, as always.
Yep. So tonight we have his wrestling wife.
At some point. Yes, his wrestling wife. As
tonight's
well.
His wrestling wife.
Yeah, I got the other better half.
That's right.
And yeah, so
ladies and gentlemen,
I say that voice can only belong to one man.
Yes,
and that is Mr. Pete Schermacher. Pete, how are you, sir?
Doing good, man. Doing good. I just got back from the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame inductions down at Wichita Falls, Texas. Man, I'll tell you, that museum is amazing.
Yeah, do you want to take? It's gonna be a long show, so we won't spend too much time on it. But do you want to take just a couple moments to talk about your trip?
I'll cover it somewhere else because, yeah, this is going to be a long show. But I will say, if you're in the area, it's definitely worth checking it out.
All right. And, of course, Pete's Twitter had all the pictures up as well, so check that out.
Yeah.
So that was yours and Kelly's wrestling honeymoon. You went to Wichita Falls, Texas.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight, gentlemen, we are on the eve, JR, mm-hmm. of our second official big show. Or third, I should say, big show of the year. Of course, talking about WrestleMania 2 is right around the corner. One more stop before we get to the Tri-City Extravaganza on Monday night, April 7th. So let's dive right in.
Okay.
The date is March 16th, 1986. Live, of course, JR, from our office, Madison Square Garden in New York City. Pete, don't dirty Kelly's desk. very OCD about that. Don't touch his Maple Leafs. No, I'm only kidding. Don't touch his Flames, Lanny McDonald, bobblehead. Now, this is a matinee, JR, and we'll explain why it's a matinee. It's a Sunday, and it's a matinee, and we'll explain in the pop culture report why they're doing a day show here. But technically, there were three shows going on that day. This roster wrestled a second time. We'll go to the other roster first. They were up at the Met Center in Minneapolis, AWA country, a stoked crowd of 1,300. Here was your card.
1,300 or 13,000?
1,300.
Oh, wow.
Hey, yeah, 1,300.
Quiet.
Yeah, quiet very show. Quiet. Yes, it is. Dory Funk Jr. defeated Scott McGee. Jim Neidhart defeated Tony Atlas. Here's an interesting one. Bret Hart fought Danny Spivey to a draw. Hmm. Paul Orndorff defeated Cowboy Bob Orton. B. Brian Blair and Jumpin' Jim Brunzel defeated Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik via disqualification.
No humbling.
And the Junkyard Dog. And the Junkyard Dog defeated Terry Funk. Now, there's an interesting thing here, Chahar, because Bob Orton was in Minnesota that evening, but he's here today.
Hmm.
So he actually did not go where the rest of the roster went, and we'll tell you that in a second. He got on a plane, flew to Minneapolis.
How random. I wonder why. They couldn't find anyone else to just fill that spot, or they felt like he was a big draw in Minneapolis for the 1,300 people that were there. It's an odd ask. Poor Bob. I almost feel like that could be wrong. Like, you know, I feel like maybe it wasn't him, it was someone else, and this listing is wrong. It's just odd that they would have made him go there, unless he had to be there anyway for something.
Yeah. What do you think, Pete? It's kind of odd, right?
Yeah, but maybe it's because, I mean, I think him and Pedro have been feuding, and maybe they felt this would be important for the Garden. I'm not sure, honestly.
Well, I think it's fine he's at the Garden, because that's the day show. It's weird that they made him fly to Minneapolis to fight Bob Orton, Paul Orndorff at night. In front of 1,300 people, that it felt like it's a little bit much. Unless it was another reason that he had to go there, but anyway.
maybe I don't know. I mean, we got to look at maybe some more results, and maybe he was actually headlining some like spottier, some smaller shows, and that was the troupe he was going with.
Yeah, because he does go. They go to Manitoba the next night. It's the first ever show in Winnipeg, and he's there against Orndorff again. So maybe they wanted him to go out on that loop. So he just made the flight out
up to Canada. Yeah, so. So there's your card from the Met Center in Minneapolis. As you could tell, it was like a fucking wake. Very unpleasant there. Meanwhile, this group, the rest of this Garden crowd, trekked, probably 2.5 hours north to the Hartford Civic Center in the capital of this fine
– what a letdown going from Madison Square Garden to fucking Hartford.
Yeah, no kidding, right? To the mall, if you will. Your card may sound slightly familiar.
I'll say maybe not mention it because it's going to be what we talk about.
All right. Well, so. I'll mention the matches that of guys you will not see here. Iron Mike Sharp pinned SD Jones.
That's fine. Fine that we don't see that.
Let's see.
The
main event. Hulk Hogan and Big John Studd wrestled. Hogan got the win in a world. I'm assuming it was a world title match. Hogan's ribs were taped after the assault he sustained from King Kong Bundy as part of course, what happened on Saturday's main event. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you the rest of the card after this show because the matches aren't exact. We don't want to spoil who's there.
Yeah.
But there's other matches. The combinations are different a little bit than what we have here at the Garden that they had in Hartford. And again, when we get to the pop culture report later, we'll let you know why the Garden had a day show that day. JR, the rest of the report.
Yes, our world champion is still Hulk Hogan, 783 days. Randy Savage, our Intercontinental Champion at 36 days, the Dream Team, 204 days to their reign, and the Fabulous Moolah, 111 days into her reign as champion. And as we mentioned, the Dodef made his debut in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, the next day. We also have some... Yep, go ahead.
I just want to make very quickly, JR. Earlier in the month, there were a lot of debuts they did in cities. I think a couple weeks earlier in March, they did their first show ever in New Orleans, which was kind of cool. So you could tell now that, you could tell that now Vince is starting to kind of dip his toe in the waters of some of these other markets that normally he never did before, his dad never did. So you can definitely see that now, and you'll probably see that a lot throughout 1986. Debut show in such and such a city. I think you'll notice that a lot throughout 1986 as he starts to spread out
And that's what really I find really fascinating is actually looking where they were able to draw initially versus what they couldn't go against. Because there's like you could always – like in Texas, they always had a problem drawing in Houston because of Paul Bosch and Dallas because of the Von Erichs. And they had problems like with Canada because of Stu Hart's legacy. But other places they were able to be accepted and stuff, which I always find interesting on geographical regions and stuff.
And speaking of geographical regions, here's what's happened since our last show at MSG, February 17th. On the February 22nd show of episode of Championship Wrestling, Piper's Pit started with Rowdy One saying no one in the draft had the guts to fight Bob Orton. I think we covered this last time, right, Scott? But
yeah, we covered this in the Strongest Man event.
Yeah, out came Hogan and he ended up fighting Mr. T. From February 22nd through March 2nd, WWF ran their first ever shows in Australia, marking the debut of the Rougeau brothers. March 1st, WWF held the first ever Slammies. We covered that as well. On the same night was that Saturday's Main Event that we talked about a week ago. On March 2nd, Jake the Snake Roberts made his official WWF debut at a house show in Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto. We'll talk about that. On the March 8th episode of Championship Wrestling, Mean Gene announced for the first time that WrestleMania 2 will emanate from three locations, New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles. And the three main events were revealed as well. In L.A., Hulk Hogan will defend his WWF title against King Kong Bundy in a steel cage. In Long Island, New York, Roddy Piper will face Mr. T in a boxing match. And in Chicago, there'll be the first annual Open Invitational Battle Royal. And, of course, that only happened once. But it was the first annual.
Yes.
At Boston Garden on March 8th, Ricky Steamboat wrestled Bret Hart. A match originally supposed to happen at WrestleMania 2, but the match was changed just weeks before the event. Steamboat requested this match on the Boston Garden to make it up to the Hitman. And on that same show, the Haiti Kid was a guest of Piper's Pit. Piper says there's a rumor that the Haiti Kid was friends with Mr. T. And when he says he is, there was hopes that Piper would get beaten by T. Piper said if he likes T so much, he should look just like him. And this led to Piper taping Haiti Kid's mouth and shaving his hair into a mohawk. And we'll talk more about the Haiti Kid in a little bit here, for better or for worse. So why don't we dive right in, guys? Jesse okay. Ventura back in the booth alongside Gorilla Monsoon. And that was funny. Jesse says they're acquaintances. And they have their differences. They're not exactly good friends. It's kind of
I know. It is funny.
And we kick things off with our buddy. And P, I'll be looking forward to your thoughts on him because I don't think he's been around since I don't think you've done a show since he's been around. But and that is CVAFI taking on Moondog Spot. CVAFI set to give it another go. He's left the pomp this time and just gets a better reception overall. He's no longer announced as Superfly. He doesn't have the Shaft theme. He doesn't have the big dog and pony show. So he just kind of comes out and he doesn't get brutally beaten down by the crowd as much as he did the first time around. Spot's back as well for the first time in a couple months. Jesse and Gorilla talk about the tattoos and the island culture, referencing Peter Maivia. We get some slow-paced reversals with Afi botching a leapfrog as Gorilla notes that he has a very injured left ankle, which is all taped up. Gorilla Black blames his lack of foot attire for that injury, and Jesse agrees. We get more of a stalemate with Afi trying to work the arm as Jesse takes shots at Fink. Gorilla discusses WrestleMania 2, informing us that it'll be emanating across the three arenas on pay-per-view and closed circuit. He also talks about Hogan versus Bundy in the cage. Spot gets a few shots in, but Afi stops him cold, kicks away, and goes to the arm. Jesse questions Hogan's brains coming back so soon from injury and stepping inside a cage. Afi shoulder blocks Spot, then runs the ropes as Gorilla states how quick he is. Spot plants Afi with a backbreaker but punches him in the head, and Afi blows up and bows up and no-sells it. Spot backs off and lands a knee lift and then another backbreaker for two. Afi comes back with a sunset flip for two, but Spot maintains control with a kick and then a chin lock. Afi starts punching his way into it, but Spot drops him with an atomic drop for a near fall. Afi reverses a whip and then backdrops Spot and drops an elbow for two. Afi follows with a flying forearm for two and a leaping kick to the gut and a diving headbutt for another close near fall. Afi eats a knee on a charge, but dodges Spot coming off the middle rope and finishes him with a flying cross body off the top. There's just no way around it, guys. Afi sucks. Spot was working circles around him here, and I thought Afi looks slow. He looks hesitant in everything he does. Nothing he does is impressive at all, and he's not fast. He's not skilled. He's not exciting. It was good that the crowd was nicer to him, but even his high cross body sucked. I mean, that's like something you should be able to do. So I went straight dud on this, and I thought Afi looked just as bad as he did the last time out, Scott.
I gave it a half star. I gave a charity half. I mean, it would, Spotty, we've given him a lot of crap, since we rebooted about, some of his other, performances at these shows, but he had to do a yeoman's job because I think CVAFI really got shell shocked after that debacle that happened. And I don't think he's been the same.
I just think he sucks. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with his the reaction to him last time.
Well, you know, it's funny. He wasn't, but he wasn't. I know, but he wasn't as bad. I mean, he was bad here. Oh, but bad.
I don't know if it's the ankle or what, but I mean, he can barely move.
Yeah, he definitely – I think definitely there was some kind of issue with – I think something got in his head because of what happened. You know, I think he was given – I think he thought he was – you know, Vince sold him a bill of goods that he was going to be this superstar, the next Snuka, and then he just got totally trashed on. I don't think he recovered from it. I think he was kind of a mess. I think he was hesitant – like you said, he was hesitant physically back at the Garden. I think he was hesitant mentally too. I think he – I have a feeling he was not quite sure what to do or how the crowd – was going to react to him, and I think he never got into the match. So I'm going to give it a half star just for Spotty carrying him, because we've given Spotty a lot of crap for some of his past matches, but I think he did yeoman's work here to at least make this look.
Yeah, he kept
you know,
that on negative. He kept that on a negative star. that's what Spotty did.
Yeah. I love hearing Gorilla and Jesse just talking. Like, they're just so sing-songy. Like, they're so, like, we talk about how, you know, the following year they is like when they hit their peak, but I really do think from the house show perspective, because after a while, obviously, we won't be seeing them here at the Garden. They definitely have gotten comfortable, and, you know, yeah, Gorilla throws, you know, Jesse throws his jabs at Gorilla. Gorilla, you know, giggles him off and moves on. But I think it's, you know, these house shows, they kind of settle in because they know only a select group's watching, so they can say certain things they can't say on, like, Championship Wrestling or that kind of thing, or, you know, broadcast TV. So I thought they were pretty, very comfortable, and they made the show really move. Considering how long it was, really kind of moved along. So I was happy with that. But I'll give it a half star just for – Spotty deserves somewhat of a reward for having to deal with this nonsense. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I actually – I really like Jesse and Gorilla as a team because I feel Gorilla grounds Jesse a little bit so he's not so over the top. So we get a little bit more analysis from Jesse. And I really like the rhythm and the routine a lot, especially on house shows. Here, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I give it a star because I liked Offie's arm work a little bit. I thought that was kind of nifty for a little bit. But I mean, yeah, he was sloppy. We talk about the ankle being tied up, but I thought Spot did a really good job of directing traffic and bringing him where he needed to be and stuff. But yeah, but it was definitely nothing to write home about or anything.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how much longer he sticks around here, but he, I mean, they definitely helped him by not doing the Superfly thing again and the music and the big show. I mean, it was clear he wasn't going to, my guess is the one thing that changed between his last appearance and this one is that they decided to make him another guy versus, like, trying to build him up to maybe be someone. Like, I mean, when you give him the Superfly name and the music and the torch show and all that, you're building him up to be, like, a contender or a player. And I think by this point, they've probably decided that, all right, we got to strip him down and just probably just make him just another guy at this point. I mean, that's my guess as to what changed between these two shows.
Oh, yeah, and he had to notice that, too. I mean, because he can't be, I mean, unless he's just totally a dummy. I mean, when you come out with all the bells and whistles and then the next time out you don't have them, that should tell you something immediately, you know?
Right. Yeah, that was the Superfly thing was very, very misguided. So, all right, next up, Scott here and Pete and MSG. Our next match is Hercules taking on our buddy George Wells. Big power match on paper. Gorilla talks about WrestleMania 2 yet again as we get underway. And I was kind of sad, guys. No more number 69 jersey again for Wells this time. So it's it looks like it may be retired permanently, just a one-time thing. Herc is with Freddie Blassie, as always, and looking jacked and wild. Wells starts fast off the bell with a couple of quick arm drags, sending Herc bailing to the corner. Gorilla notes Wells' weight gain and says he's looked lethargic recently. He also says Herc is unorthodox. Herc kicks away at Wells and drills him with a knee to the head. Gorilla calls back to Wells' eye injury as Herc clobbers him against the ropes to booze. Wells comes back with a flurry of punches and chops to send Herc to the floor. Wells follows him out, but they come right back in, and Wells goes to work on the arm until Herc buries him with an inverted atomic drop. Herc uses his power offense to dominate and goes up top, and then it costs him as Wells catches him on a crossbody and drops him with a backbreaker, which I thought was a pretty impressive spot. Wells tries a wild shoulder tackle, but Herc dodges him, and he crashes into the corner, allowing Herc to cover for the win. This was quick paced. It was kind of a fun little power match. Not much flow. The finish was weird, and Wells catching Herc on the crossbody was pretty neat. But honestly, outside of that one spot, there's not too much here. Herc is still green, still chugging along, and I just went half a star on this just for that one spot at the end and the energy they brought. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I went 3/4 of a star. I enjoyed, yeah, like with you, I enjoyed the strange spots by Herc. I thought they got pretty, I thought their heat, they got solid heat from the Garden. Wells is just so bland. though, and just he's just there. And you would never, I mean, he's kind of a, he's, I mean, big as in, like, you know, he fills out a frame, but he's just not, you know, he's not someone you think should go toe-to-toe with Hercules in a way.
Right.
But, and I also liked the finish. I thought it was a real solid finish.
What do you think, Scott?
I gave this a dud. Fucking hate George. I hate George Wells. He's a fumbling oaf. And Gorilla sets it up. He really goes into these matches, and every match we've seen him lose, he's lost on his own. And Gorilla has said it at least like four times since we've started watching these that George Wells screwed that up. Oh, he did that to himself, Jesse. Like literally every time. He's a fumbling oaf.
And he really has gotten his way out of shape. I mean, I remember when we saw some of his earlier stuff in 85, he looked to be he was like kind of slimmer and faster than I remembered him to be. But now this is kind of the Wells I remember with the more of the gut and a little bit more slow and sluggish. And I wonder how much that eye injury took out of him. Like, it seemed to really derail him.
Hey, but in 85, he was also coming off of coming from Mid-South. And, I mean, Bill Watts wasn't going to let him be a, you know.
True, yep.
But he's going to yell at and rip his ass. And so that had probably had something to do with him staying in shape for a little bit in the WWF.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's not good. And Herc did everything he could, but he's still very green as well. It just was, it was bad. It was bad top to bottom. I actually think this was worse than CVAFI and,
wow,
and
really?
Spotty. Yeah, it was bad. He always looks so confused and he doesn't know what to do and he's fumbling around and those stupid Master P and the No Limit Soldiers tights just don't work anymore. They're just awful. The whole package is the shits.
That move of him catching them coming off the crossbody and slamming was better than anything that happened in that CVAFI match.
I think it was luck, to be honest with you. I think it was just instinct, to be quite honest with you. I gave it a dud. He's awful. I hope after WrestleMania 2 we never see him again. We probably do see him, but I hope we never see him again. So there we go. We have one dud apiece. And Pete gives two. Pete gave it a. Would you give it a star? My God!
I gave it a 3/4. I gave it the first one a star.
Okay, that's half a star too much. Anyway, all right. So there you go.
Don't listen
George Wells. George Wells is atrocious. So we had George Wells versus CVAFI. We might as well just shut the lights off. All right. Now we get some entertainment, JR. What do we got?
Yeah, we do have some entertainment, and that is our big tag match, bringing things up to our back to the ring, as Dump Matsumoto and Bull Nakano are taking on Miss Linda Gonzalez and Velvet McIntyre. So I want to make sure I get all the names right, unlike Gorilla butchered this whole thing. So let's cover off, because this is four debuts for us here tonight. And, of course, Dump and Bull are coming over from Japan for a visit here at MSG. And our, you know, we've seen this a few times at MSG, and I always think it's kind of cool that they do it when they bring in random, you know, stars from Japan or London or, you know, wherever, you know, Mexico, anywhere, to bring them in to showcase them here at MSG. So it was kind of neat. It's a special treat. Karu Matsumoto, ring name Dump Matsumoto, made her debut at All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling in 1980. 3 years into the business, won the AJW Championship after defeating Lioness Suzuka. Here in 1986, she would come to the U.S. and tag with Bull Nakano as the Devils of Japan before returning to All Japan, retire from active wrestling in February of 1988, but has made occasional appearances at reunion shows in Japan since then. Matsumoto was named to the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame in 1996. Kayako Nakano began her career in All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling in 1983 at the age of 15, wrestling the name Bull Nakano after she won the All Japan Junior Championship. 1 year later, at the age of 16, a year later, she won the All Japan Championship and held it for 3 years. During this time, she was a tag team with her mentor, Dump Matsumoto. The team would have a brief run in the WWF here in 1986 before going on to win the World Women's Wrestling Association Tag Team titles in August. Nakano would have another WWF run in 1994 that we'll get to as well. No background on Linda Gonzalez. Pete, do you have any info on her?
Not a clue. I was wondering who the heck she was.
She's terrible. Velvet McIntyre began her wrestling training in 1980 with Sandy Barr in Oregon. The early part of her career was spent in the Pacific Northwest until she signed with the WWF in 1982. During that time, she would travel through Mid-South Stampede in the AWA, where she had battles with Wendy Richter and Joyce Grable. McIntyre rejoined the WWF in early 1984, where her and her tag partner from previous territories, Princess Victoria, were given the initial women's tag team titles. So before we get into the match, Pete, your thoughts or comments on Bull and Dump?
I'm with you. I kind of think it's cool that they come in and take a shot at, especially in MSG. And it was fun here that they didn't beat them. They actually put them over. A lot of times they'll just give them some go dopey gimmick or do something that makes it look goofy. But here I thought they presented them as superstars. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I have a whole lot of background on them because I'm not a big. Which it sounds sexist. It's like it's not that I'm not a female wrestling fan. It's just with Joshi, it's all female, so I've never been able to get into it because I like watching female wrestling while it's like in a variety with men wrestling. So I've never been able to get into Joshi. So I really don't have a whole lot of background on them, to tell you the truth, because it's just something I've never been able to get into. And I'm sure you guys heard it here. Another turnoff for a lot of people for Joshi is you hear a lot of yelling and screaming while they're hitting each other. And you heard it here in the match, and that's another turnoff. It just sounds something I've never been able to get into.
Turnoff for some, and turn on, I'm sure, for very many. Yes. All right, let's talk about the match. Big tag team women's action here. Strong Japanese imports. Jesse puts over the Japanese women as Gorilla butches Bull's name right out of the gate. He calls her Nakayoya, which is just like way off. Gorilla says they're super heavyweights, and Jesse says the second one has a Japanese monk hairstyle. Bull, and by the way, this is like the most, racially insensitive commentary I think we've got to this point, but we'll
cover it. And how many Japanese monks has he known or has he even seen in his lifetime, as I want to know?
It made no sense.
Were they able to identify the haircut?
It made no sense. It was such a random comment. Such a forced one. Bull puts on a nunchucks display as the dump, as Gorilla calls her, and that will continue. Takes off her armor to get us underway. Gorilla says Velvet's ranked in the top three ladies of pro wrestling across the world in any era of any day and time, even like 1999. Would Velvet McIntyre ever, 1999 WWF, I'm saying. Is Velvet McIntyre ever ranked in the top three ladies of pro wrestling? I mean, anywhere? Probably not, right?
No.
She didn't make Chad's greatest wrestler ever, top 100, I don't think. But Bull and Dump have a great presence and charisma, just stalking on the ring, doing their thing. Jesse is shocked to see a blonde Japanese woman. This is ridiculous. As Dump and Velvet open things up, Gorilla says she has bigger thighs than he does and talks about the tattoos on her legs. Velvet gets a roll-up as Gorilla calls them tons of fun, and Jesse says she could do the stud slam challenge. I mean, this is just off the rails already. Bull tags in, and Velvet works the arm, takes her down, but Bull just kicks her off with ease, yanks her to the mat. Velvet comes back with a cross body block for two, but Bull just whips her across the ring by her hair and tags in Dump. Dump gets a side headlock and clotheslines her into the corner, letting her tag Linda, who then Dump yanks into the ring. Dump crushes her with a clothesline, but Linda dodges a Bull leg drop off the top. Bull catches Linda from behind and kicks away and then puts her down with a body block for one. Bull drags Linda's eyes across the ropes, and Jesse says they've been watching his tapes back in Japan. Jesse says Linda would make a good partner for Ted Arcidi because she could bench press alongside of him. Dump comes in and spikes Linda down and then clubs away. Linda makes the tag, but Ref was tied up with Bull. Jesse says the tag shouldn't be allowed anyway since Velvet's feet weren't on the mat. Linda kicks Bull down on a charge, but Bull shoves her back and then whiffs on a leg drop. Bull levels Linda with a great punch to the jaw, then shoves her down and watches her tag Velvet. Gorilla's just destroying the referee, who's letting everything just go down, all this double teaming. Bull mares Velvet around and tags in Dump, who splatters Velvet with a seated splash off the middle rope. Jesse says Dump hasn't missed many rice meals, as the referee is a mess trying to keep track of what's going on. Dump has a wrist lock on as Velvet just keeps diving to make a tag, but every time she dives, Bull ties up the ref. Bull comes in and works the arm as Bull just, and she just came in without a tag. And they hit a double clothesline. The ref is just standing there watching them. Gorilla calls the ref a goof as Bull and Dump keep double teaming, catching a diving Velvet and spiking her to the mat. Velvet catches Bull with a dropkick and tags in Linda, who comes in with a pair of dropkicks or two. Velvet comes back in and they hit a double dropkick followed by a Velvet dropkick on Dump. The crowd is all fired up as Velvet and Linda hit Bull with a double back elbow for two. Dump tags in and botches a clothesline as Linda ducked too early and then follows with a hard one that connects. Dump picks up Linda into an airplane spin, slams her to the mat, and falls on her with a headbutt for the win. Really sloppy and chaotic, but in a fun way, in a spectacle kind of way. The crowd was into it. Bull and Dump had fun power offense, but Velvet and Linda just had no clue how to hang with them. They were just in over the heads big time, just completely lost. Gorilla says Bull and Dump should look at the sumo ranks in Japan to get one last fat joke in. Him and Jesse just relentless this whole time. The referee is a disaster, too. He had no idea what was going on. So I thought the spectacle, that bumps up the grade for me. The match itself was a bit of a train wreck, and Jesse, Gorilla, and the ref did not help things at all. So I went 2 stars just for the pure spectacle of this thing, and because Bull and Dump are so much fun to watch. But the rest of this was just a fucking mess, Scott.
Yeah, this was this was really bad in the sense that, I mean, I don't know what crawled up Gorilla's ass and died, but he was just such a, he was so like irritated this entire show. I don't know what his problem was, but I don't know if he, you know, if the check bounced or he, you know, his fucking pastrami sandwich was late for lunch. I don't know what his problem was, but he's was so he was miserable on this show. And it gets, it just, it doesn't change. And I mean, and he was taking pleasure in calling her the dump.
Right.
And when you said that,
when he calls them tons of fun, it's ridiculous.
Tons of fun. Their thighs are bigger than mine. You know, Gorilla, you should look in the mirror for Christ's sake. You still weigh like 400 freaking pounds. I mean, what was his problem? Oh, here comes. Look, her tights say dump, so she doesn't forget that her name's Dump.
Maybe Dump ate his pastrami sandwich.
Probably. But I mean, it's like, oh,
maybe
look,
Dump turned maybe Dump turned him down, you know, for a little dalliance back at the condo.
I know, because it's like, look, her name's Dump because it's on her tights. Dump. Look, Jesse, it's Dump. Like he just couldn't stop saying Dump. Like he was 12 years old. It
giggling
was ridiculous.
Like fucking Matt Rotella.
No, exactly. Yes. Oh, he was right in his wheelhouse.
The Dump.
Worse than Jesse and worse. Dump.
Here comes the dump. Here comes the bull. Like, I don't know why he kept calling it that, too. It was ridiculous. I don't know if he thought it was extra insult to say the dump.
Yeah. It was just, it was really bad. And the worst part was, the referee was just, he was just a mess. I don't know what the deal was tonight. Everybody, like, had their heads up their asses.
Yeah.
This was not the only referee situation that went awry on our matches tonight. He didn't know a clue what was going on. And the worst thing to have was, I mean, Velvet McIntyre is terrible. And whatever her name was, Elian, I was called Elian Gonzalez. Linda, she might as well have been. Linda Gonzalez, I mean, where'd they get her from?
Yeah.
It was bad. But sometimes you have like Spotty, Offy, Wells, Hercules bad, which is just boring, unwatchable crap. And then you've got this bad, which is literally like a train on fire. And you can't stop looking at it, even though it's just a colossal mess. And that made it fun. But Gorilla, I don't know what was wrong with him tonight. He was so angry. I don't know if he got a parking ticket outside or I don't know what the deal was. But he was just so unhappy tonight. And Jesse, believe it or not, was the tamer of the two in terms of tearing these poor Japanese girls apart. What do you think, Pete, of the dump?
You know, first thing I was wondering, why didn't they just book the Japanese girls the other against the Crush girls, where we think we'd have a better match, and then your local teams only get beaten once as opposed to twice, so right. I understand that.
I wonder, Pete, you know, I wonder if it was a case where, like, you know, All Japan or whatever didn't want to have – they were all from the same company, right? Crush girls were from there too.
I forget which company it was, but yeah.
I wonder if they didn't want them like competing against each other and one of them losing. Like, I wonder if part of the deal was to come over here and be showcased with wins. You know, like
that could be it. Yeah. That could very well could be it. Yeah, I mean that makes sense too. I just thought, and maybe Vince knew that maybe if you put these girls together, they just might just overshadow the rest.
True.
Of the show,
yeah, that too.
And be kind of like a Dynamite Kid versus Tiger Mask. A thing that happened years ago, and he maybe didn't want that to happen either. I thought it was interesting. Again, the Japanese girls were so much above these, above Gonzalez and McIntyre here, and you know, in the '80s, the WWF women were never known for their work rate extravaganzas anyway. And then to put them in with some girls who can actually go and do some interesting spots, it just didn't really work. I mean, somehow it worked later on, a couple years later, with the Jumping Bomb Angels, but it did not work here. I thought McIntyre was fine early on. She was, like, using her speed, but it's funny is she's not really even fast. But they were doing that type of spots for her. I thought the hair pull setting up the heat was okay. I enjoy Pull and Dump just destroying the faces. I thought the crowd heat was really into it, which is kind of shocking. Mm-hmm. Sometimes MSG has a tendency to shit on foreigners who are not doing the stereotypical foreigner gimmick, and they weren't doing it here. But then we get this hot tag that was just so frigid cold. It was really scary. It just had a lot of interesting parts, but a lot of garbage. So I went 2 stars also. But man, it just didn't work.
Yeah, it was like I said, it was more of just a spectacle of getting to see them here. And I think you're right, too, on that. They probably didn't want them and the Crush Girls to just go out and, like, tear the house down. And they probably thought it better just to kind of showcase them both separately. And, I mean, they were working here for a little bit, right? So, I mean, they had deals to stick around. So maybe they were going to build to a match between the two. And this is more than just, like, a like we saw, like, a showcase last year with who came in, Scott? It was a Cobra. It was a
Fujinami.
Yeah, Fujinami,
in fact,
right? So, you
I
know,
was about to use that.
Right.
Well, go ahead, finish your point.
I was saying, it wasn't something like that where they just brought them in and kind of a one stop. You know, these ladies were sticking around, so.
Well, it's funny you say that point, JR, because I was about to say that if you go back to that vault, when we were talking about Fujinami, and that night I was actually looking it up, he wrestled Matt Bourne. And that match, we gave it 2.5 stars, you and I. Well, you gave it 2, I gave it 2.5. And it was good, but we're thinking, wow, who could Fujinami have gone with?
Right.
And Steamboat was wrestling fucking Spotty later in the show. And I said, oh, my God, Fujinami and Steamboat. But, Pete, to your point, we thought, wow, they would have blew the garden up if you did that match.
Yeah.
And the rest of it would have been trash. So
I think we talked about, too, not wanting, like, they weren't going to want Steamboat to job at that point. He had just come in. And they weren't going to have, you know, Fujinami lose in a showcase. I think that was part of it, too. And that's probably this as well. So this way, both the Crush Girls and Bull and Dump get showcased so they'll have to lose.
Exactly. Exactly. And they really worked their butts off. And this whole screaming thing, they're heels. They were supposed to be, like, kind of psychotic and insane. So I had no problem with that either. But I felt bad because Gorilla was just so angry. You know, I mean, look, Jesse, her tights say dump. It's like he couldn't just stop saying it. He was like a little kid. It was really bad. But they get the win. So
I think it's probably the worst commentary we've heard, from him since we've been watching this stuff. I mean, he was just completely gone, completely off the rails. Like none of it was really even that funny. I mean,
throughout the show, he was getting on the refs a little way too much, and it was like actually distracting for a while.
Yeah. He definitely has tendencies to go that route, and yeah, on this one, you're right. He was doing it quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a shtick, and you know, sometimes he overboards it, and it's just not good.
He definitely did on this show, and we'll keep talking about it.
Yeah.
But this was the first real bad case of it, on top of the fact he was trashing the girls in the ring. So there you go. Bull and Dump get the victory.
Hopefully Dump took a dump in his bag after.
Yeah. All right, back to normal, JR, with our next match.
All right, the great Pedro Morales, still bumming around, taking on Cowboy Bob Orton. A Battle of Veterans is up next. Morales is kind of wandering around looking for something of substance. He really hasn't had much of a feud or issue since he's returned. I mean, he's been back since when, Scott? When did we see him? It was like the spring, right? Because Parv was on the one we talked about, so that was like May.
That was, let me look now.
I think he's been around at least since like May again. And I mean, he's literally in about a year done nothing besides just kind of aimlessly meander through the company. He had that one, you know, back in December, the tag title match or whatever. But other than that, he's really done nothing much.
He was at, let's see.
I think it was May.
May?
All right, well, take a look while I go through the match.
I'll take a look while you're good.
So big pop for Pedro. He saunters out to face the Cowboy, who no longer has his cast on, by the way. Gorilla talks about Orton and Piper shaving Haiti Kid's hair, and Jesse says they thought they should have charged him for the cut because it improved his looks. Pedro's all over Orton to start, smacking him around and sending him bailing to the floor. Jesse keeps laughing about Haiti's little legs running through the air as Piper and Orton were carrying him away. And he's just like cracking up. He cannot stop himself from laughing, thinking about Haiti Kid. Gorilla talks WrestleMania 2, discusses Piper's 10-round boxing match with Mr. T. Jesse said Lou Duva has talked very highly of Piper's abilities, and of course he'll be in his corner at Mania. Morales gets an atomic drop. We talk about Piper and Orton whipping Mr. T on Saturday's main event, which Jesse says he deserved because it took him down a peg. Orton punches away at Pedro in the corner, showing off his boxing skills and knocking Pedro to the mat. Orton clubs away at the chest and clobbers Pedro across the neck off the top rope. Orton goes to the chin lock and releases and punches away, knocking Pedro hard to the floor. Orton heads out and slams Pedro hard on the floor and keeps punching him in the head as he tries to come back in. Pedro goes to the eyes and fights his way into the ring, where he unloads some punches and slugs Orton down, eventually knocking him to the floor. Pedro follows out and spikes him into the table, punches away. Pedro runs Orton into the turnbuckle pole, then yanks him into the ring. Orton tries to bail, but Pedro drills him and runs him into the post. Morales spikes Orton's throat across the turnbuckle and then blocks a suplex, but Orton instead hoists up Morales and suplexes him crotch first across the top rope, drawing the DQ. The two then brawl after the bell, with Pedro socking him hard with a right hand that sends Orton bailing. I thought it was a really fun match, but it had a real dumb finish. Like, they couldn't come up with a better DQ. Like, Orton couldn't just hit him with a chair or something. It was choppy, but I liked all the brawling and the stiff strikes. It developed nicely, but then the finish just kind of killed things. I would have preferred honestly, to the finish we got, I would have liked a hot double disqualification brawl instead, where they just go on the floor and beat the shit out of each other and get counted out or something like that. Because the heat on the post-match was crazy. Like, the crowd was super into it. So, and I was surprised, too, that Orton didn't win here with Mania around the corner. And Morales not really doing much. Fine veteran brawl, not much else. I went a star and a half just because I thought they had some good energy and some good brawling spots. Pete, what'd you think?
I liked it more than you. I give it 2.5. I legit, I think Bob Orton's a great worker.
Oh, yeah, he definitely is, yeah.
And I think he's so much better than Randy, so much more entertaining. And I thought and Pedro's a load at this point. Pedro is not a good worker. He has a hot comeback, and he throws a decent punch, and he sells decently. But he's at this point in his career, he just doesn't have it. And I thought what Orton did here was almost like a miracle, a total miracle. I'm liking all those punches and the jabs in the corner that Bob's thrown were just absolutely beautiful. And then you see Orton start working over the neck, which I thought, I love that story, the ongoing story of that. And I thought Orton, every time Pedro made comebacks, I thought he was fantastic at bumping and making Morales look like a million bucks. I liked every time he wanted to, when Morales would make comebacks, I liked Orton cutting him off and getting more heat on him, which I enjoyed the hell of a lot. But yeah, the finish was shit, but I thought Orton, what he did here was an absolute miracle to get this much out of Pedro Morales. And around this time, Orton was putting on really great matches with just not really good workers, like Pedro's here as an example. I know he gets into it with Billy Jack Haynes and carries Billy Jack Haynes in some great matches. I mean, the guy, by great, I mean really good. It's just fascinating on how really good, what he could have done if he would have given some really good opportunities against some good workers. Like we see when he worked Steamboat, it was excellent. And so he just didn't get a whole lot of opportunities against the cream of the crop of the WWF.
And incidentally, the first Morales match we had was in May of 85. That was that Terry Gibbs mess.
Okay.
And then we've had, you know, obviously a few since. I thought this match was solid enough. I kind of agree with Pete. I thought it was okay. I gave it, I just lost my place there. I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was fine. Pedro can, you know, slog his way through anything if he, you know, at least half-asses it somehow. And Orton is a good worker. I agree with you, JR, about the weird crotch spot. Although I kind of like Gorilla's thinking here. He said Orton knew that it could have caused a DQ. He didn't think the ref would actually call it.
Right. That was pretty, more shitting that was on the
pretty,
ref.
Yeah, that was
more pretty dumping on the ref.
More yeah. dumping on the ref. The dumping of the ref. But I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was fine. I thought it told I thought they went back and forth pretty solid.
Pedro's best stuff so far has been with, like, the other veterans, I feel like, you know, whether it's Goulet or now, or, and, like, the guys that can kind of have the, whereabouts and awareness to work just a quality match with, like, another veteran, just where they go out there and brawl and do something really, really basic. I mean, that seems to be what his wheelhouse is at this point, but, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm low on all these. Maybe these MSG shows are wearing on me. It's 1985. I'm just under. Like, to me, they're all. I started dud in my mind with all these matches and worked my way up. So a star and a half to me is like a 4-star match in some ways for MSG at this point.
Do you guys remember, though, when the network first came out and they were putting up some house shows and everyone was getting angry because they're only putting up 3 or 4 matches? These are why. Because yes. Most of the cards are garbage. If you got. If you're able to get 3 or 4 good matches on an MSG card, you're a happy camper.
Right.
For the most part, it's 75% of it's usually crap.
Yeah, it's definitely recalibrated my whole like scoring system for matches and shows. It's like if you get two good matches and like, you know, if you only get like maybe one borderline great, a couple goods, and then like a decent, and then a bunch of garbage, like that's like a great MSG show, you know? So it's interesting. But all right, why don't we move along to our next match? And this is one that plays off of last month where King Tonga and Magnificent Morocco got into it when Tonga helped Ricky Steamboat beat Morocco. And now they square off here tonight. Morocco talks shit to Gorilla as we get underway. And Gorilla tells us that Morocco will be facing Paul Orndorff at WrestleMania 2 and notes that bounty is still out there on Paul's head from Bobby Heenan. Morocco slaps Tonga in the face, but Tonga wins a tie-up and then breaks clean. leading to another Morocco slap. Morocco mockingly bows, and Tonga kicks him in the face and sends him flying to the ring, out of the ring. Gorilla talks about the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal that'll feature wrestlers and NFL stars, as Tonga works a headlock and chops away and slams Morocco with Don bailing to the floor. Morocco comes back in and goes to the gut, and then we head back. And then as we head back in, we get talk about the tag title match between the Dream Team and the Bulldogs at WrestleMania 2, and that'll have two referees to keep order. Tonga dropkicks Morocco to the floor and then works the arm when he returns. Jesse turns to talk to Adrian Adonis versus Uncle Elmer match at WrestleMania as Tonga controls the action. Morocco's nose is bleeding as Tonga continues to keep him off balance with slams and arm drags. Gorilla mentions the Randy Savage or George Steele WrestleMania Intercontinental title match as Morocco finally turns the tide with a Samoan drop. Jesse's grossed out by the potential of a George Steele IC title run as Morocco kicks away and levels Tonga with some clotheslines. Jesse and Gorilla talk about King Curtis Iaukea, and Jesse gets in a funny line about him and Gorilla being on top of that big 1929 card. Morocco runs Tonga into the buckle, but of course that gets nothing but fire Tonga up, who comes flying out with a flurry of punches and chops and a falling headbutt. Fuji gets on the apron, and Tonga goes over and grabs him, allowing Morocco to jab him in the throat with the cane for the win. Another decent match. I never really got into gear. It was mostly plotting, but has some good spots. I thought Tonga looked way better here than he has recently in these matches we've seen him. And I like the cheating finish to set up Morocco for Mania with a nice win. I went a star and a half, and Scott, you know, I thought it was interesting, too. It's funny when we get these shows where Gorilla and Jesse have things to talk about, because normally they just kind of ramble on and talk about the match and other stuff. And when they're on the precipice of these big shows, it's funny, like, all of a sudden the commentary is just filled with hype, you know? So they've been working WrestleMania 2 and constantly throughout the night, which makes a lot of sense. It's just such a dichotomy to what we normally hear from these guys. So what did you think of the match, Scott, and then the commentary as well?
I gave it a star and a half. I believe I said, I think I matched it with yours. Yeah, star and a half. I was a little disappointed, actually. I was kind of hoping, it was good to see Tonga up his game a little bit, because he has thrown a couple stinkers out. And, you know, big Morocco fan I am. These guys were pumped up. I mean, Jesse and Gorilla were pumped for this match. And, yeah, it just didn't deliver. Something was missing. And I know, you know, people like Parv are going to say, yeah, what was missing was any talent Morocco had. But I mean, I think they really could have gone up a level or two, because, you know, they both kind of wrestle the same way. You know, Tonga's a pretty thick guy. He's not a high flyer or anything. He wrestles similar to the way Morocco does. So I was expecting a little bit more power out of this match, and it didn't deliver in that aspect, but it was solid enough. And Tonga definitely kind of upped the game a little bit. I think he knows that good things are on the horizon for him. And commentary, there's no doubt, and we see this a lot throughout our time here at the Garden. When there's something to talk about, the guys make sure that, you know, there's a point to talk about it. When we get to like April, May, June, when there's nothing, when we don't know what the hell the next show is, it gets ridiculously bad. But yeah, I mean, they don't talk about WrestleMania 2 when Gorilla's trashing the Bull in the Dump, but they make sure they make up for it by mentioning WrestleMania 2 like every 30 seconds in this match. So it's pretty funny. But yeah, they definitely are boosting the hell out of it, and they need to. And they'll talk more about it as the show progresses. Yeah, I was not as impressed as I wanted to be, because I like Tonga and I like Morocco, and I was expecting a little bit more out of this, and didn't happen. But King Tonga does get the victory. Now we have some more fun, JR. Gorilla.
Oh, hang on. We got to get Pete's thoughts. He's here.
Oh, I thought Pete did. My sorry. Oh, Pete, yeah. Pete hops in, and then we're not sure if he's going to comment or not. But go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I liked it better than both of you guys. I gave it 2.25. I thought Morocco's charisma was really on point here and really helped carry it. And I'm not a Morocco guy, but I really enjoyed his work here. I thought I enjoyed right off the bat where Morocco throws that slap right at Tonga, and then Tonga comes back with that just nasty kick that sends Morocco scurrying. And then Morocco looks like he's going to hulk up and kick the crap out of Tonga, and then changes his mind and starts begging off. I absolutely loved it. We see Tonga working the arm a little bit, and then starts hits the neck, but then Morocco goes for some revenge spots, and he's all after the neck. And I really enjoyed that part of Morocco's heat of going working over the neck. You see him with the clothesline, and you see him use the top rope, and he springs it off him and to over on Tonga's neck. And all this is like a setup for his finisher, is the Oriental Spike. So everything Morocco's doing makes sense in the story of wanting to win. If you're looking at it as a shoot, and Morocco's goal is to win the match, hey, I'm trying to set up for my finisher, the Oriental Spike. So everything he was doing was just absolutely fantastic. Tonga, yeah, he's better than a lot of times you see him here, but he's just not that dynamic working underneath.
Mm-hmm.
He's good as an ass kicker, but when he's got a sell, I thought that's what really what brought the match down a little bit, was Tonga underneath having to be this baby face trying to fight. He just doesn't have it. He's just a better natural ass kicker, and it just did so. The dynamic was off a little bit here, but I thought this was a really strong Don Morocco performance.
Interesting. I thought it was not one of his best, but interesting angle that you took there, Pete, because he did kind of work psychologically there. I just mm-hmm. suspected maybe a few more power moves and stuff. So, all right, fair enough. Now we will get to Gorilla Xenophobic Anger Part 2. Although maybe not as angry as before.
Definitely
we'll
not
see.
As bad. The Crush Girls taking on Leilani Kai and Penny Mitchell. And what we have here...
What are they going to pave a parking lot?
The Crush Girls, again, imported from Japan for tonight's show. Lina Suzuka, real name Tomoko Kitamura, began a pro wrestling career in 1980 in All Japan Women's Pro Wrestling. Just had single success early on, winning the All Japan Wrestling Junior title only a year after joining the promotion, and the main title a year later. In 1983, she formed the Crush Girls with Chigusa Nagoya, who we will hear about momentarily. The feud with the Jumping Bomb Angels and Dump Matsumoto's stable made for huge ratings for All Japan Women's, and weekly ratings consistently at or above 12.0. The team broke up in the late 80s with Asuka Nagoya starting a lengthy feud. She won the WWWA World Championship in 1989 and retired for the first time a year later. Came out of retirement in 1984, formed the Redeem Array faction. She announced her final retirement in late 04 when she wrestled her final match in April 05 after suffering a neck injury. Chigusa Nagoya started All Japan Women's Wrestling in August 1980, had four title runs in the WWWA World Tag Team Championship with Lioness during the 1980s. The duo, more than just a pro wrestling team, they were cultural icons in Japan, turning their success into singing success as well, with several top 10 singles. The feud with Dump led to the first ever Japanese women's hair versus hair match in August 1985. Nagoya won the WWWA World Heavyweight title in 1988, lost that title to her former tag team partner Lioness Azuka in January 1980, retired that year, came out of retirement in 1985 for her new promotion, Gaia Japan. Had a brief run in WCW, 96-97, competing for the world title, women's world title there, and then retired a week after her former partner in April of 05. We've talked about, of course, Leilani Kai many times, and Penny Mitchell we have no background info for. So, the Crush Girls arrive to battle a pair of stalwart heels. The girls tag team match of international consequence, says Gorilla, as we get things going. Crush Girls have some interesting pop theme music that felt dubbed in, so it seemed even odder. It seemed like the guys... like editing the show picked that song, which made it more bizarre, but maybe it was actually from there. Kai and Mitchell attack before the bell, but it backfires and they get beaten around. Lioness starts off proper with Mitchell and shows off her quickness and arsenal with a kip up and a drop kick, but Penny dodges a second drop kick and tags out. Kai works the arm, but Azuka breaks free and tags in Nagoya. Nagoya and Kai trade control on the mat as we see some Japanese commentators at ringside. Nagoya grabs a single leg crab, but Leilani breaks free and tags in Penny, who gets taken down by a leg trip. Penny recovers and starts to work the arm, keeping Nagoya grounded and away from her corner. Gorilla talks about the edge of being able to communicate in a foreign language in a tag situation. Kai and Mitchell double up Nagoya on the corner and then quick tag and keep working her over. Nagoya works free and makes a tag to Asuka, who comes in and chops Mitchell down, whips her around with a giant swing to a big pop. Gorilla has the Crush Girls all mixed up. He's calling them the wrong names. As Nagoya comes, sustains a double team and nails both of the dropkick and then comes off the top with a crossbody on Mitchell for the win. Nothing special here, just a pure showcase match to establish who the Crush Girls are. They look good on offense. I thought they worked circles around Kai, and especially Mitchell. I mean, she looked like, again, head in the clouds. I went a star and a half here. I thought it was a notch below the spectacle that was Dump and Bull, but still, you know, still kind of fun. And Gorilla and Jess, you're definitely more respectful this time around. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I went a star and a half, too, and it was just, you can just see how incredible the Crush Girls are. I mean, if they got to work... somebody who could keep up with their style. And I'm a guy who actually is I like Leilani Kai, where I actually think she's actually a decent worker. But man, it just here though. I mean, you have these girls are the crush girls are just absolutely studs. I mean, just look at them. They were toning it down some of their work just because the American girls, Penny Marshall and Leilani Kai, weren't going to be able to take some of these bumps that the other girls are they're normally giving. Just look at that freaking giant swing. That was all the crush girls being able to get her up, which I don't remember which one did it. I don't think Leilani Kai helped at all. I think that was just a shoot her strength, being able to get her up and swinging her like that, which was just absolutely incredible. It was definitely a showcase. You see how incredible the crush girls are, but yeah, they just didn't have the opponents to be incredible, if that's fair.
Yeah, they definitely added more to this than and maybe because Leilani Kai and the mysterious Penny Marshall, Penny Mitchell, Laverne there. Obviously they seem to be a little bit more experienced. I gave it 2 stars. I thought it was fine. Grill and Jesse definitely. I mean, Grill is just all over the place. I mean, nobody did any homework on this show either. Maybe it was because it was a matinee and they went out the night before, but it seems like they're all just all over the place. I kind of dig this invasion, or I shouldn't say invasion, this infusion of international talent. I don't know why Vince didn't go a step further with it. You talked about the two Japanese teams, Pete. I'll get more into this when we get to the part of the show where Fink goes over the WrestleMania 2 card, because I have some ideas on, and we can get more into this, JR, next week when we actually do WrestleMania 2. Some ways to kind of juggle things up, because the Crush Girls obviously are just high flying and they're very athletic, and then you got Mr. and Mrs. Dump, who are a very different kind of Japanese worker, and putting them together somewhere probably would not have been a bad idea. But obviously Kai and Mitchell are definitely, you know, more seasoned workers than Velvet McIntyre and Linda Gonzalez were, and that made this match a lot better. Because at least, you know, the Crush Girls had something.
Wait, so you actually thought this was better than Bull and Dump?
No, what I said, I think it was more even.
All right, yeah. Okay, I got you.
This 2 stars is more match related than the other 2 stars.
Okay.
The 2 stars I gave Bull and Dump was because of the whole package. The 2 stars here I gave because at least Kai and Mitchell kind of evened the odds a bit and made the match a little more balanced. But it in ring wise, it wasn't better than Bull and Dump in that aspect. But at least the Crush Girls got to work with something here, where Bull and Dump were just—I mean, you saw it was nothing but deer and headlights in that match. But it was good that the Garden got like a little different taste of things here, and some different workers, because as mentioned, we didn't see anything like this since Fujinami and the Cobra mm-hmm. came.
Unless you count Les Thornton from.
Well, yeah, Les Thornton and yes, and anybody from Parts Unknown.
If they were going to dub music in, why not just do this? The Crush Girls, you know?
That's right.
Would have been better than whatever.
I think it was dubbed in, but was
you're
it dubbed
genius,
in?
You're genius, JR.
Was it dubbed in at the Gart? Was it dubbed in, though, back then? Or do you think
no, 24/7? It sounds dubbed in now. Like, if you listen to it, it sounds like when they dub it. I mean, but so I'm guessing it was something similar probably on that night, but it just sounds like just bizarre, like, anime pop. I don't know. It was just an odd choice. Like, it was just weird. The song was weird.
Yeah, like, you could tell Steamboat's thing is totally dubbed in.
Yeah. For sure.
You could tell Fink talking that's dubbed, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's bizarre.
Crush Girls.
What year was that song you were playing, though?
96, I think.
Yes, so, yeah. Oh, yeah, but they still could.
They could have dubbed it in, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's 96. I can look it up. But, anyway, moving on. Any final thoughts about the Crush Girls?
No. I mean, they were fine team. They worked well.
That's fine.
This match is no better than the first one. Maybe the in-ring is a little bit better, but not as entertaining as Mr. and Mrs. Dump. And Yeah, no, it was fine. It worked. It served its purpose. Gorillas, I gave it 2 stars.
Gorillas Power More. 1998.
Dump.
1998 was Jennifer Page's crush.
Then there's this one. You want to get a little closer? Little Jets, I got a crush on you. You want to get closer to the decade?
Lots of options. Lots of options. Could use crushes. Kona crushes theme. All right. Back to the Hillbilly Brigade here. As Hillbilly Jim is back in action, taking on King Kong Bundy, the man poised for WrestleMania 2 cage match for the world title. A revisiting of the old Colossal Jostle, Bundy taking on Hillbilly. Of course, they were mixing it up back in those matches, back in the double and the triple. Bundy's final MSG tune-up before L.A. Good heat on Bundy, but the crowd just loves them, this fucking Hillbilly stuff, who's out here alone tonight, by the way. No brigade with him. No contingency alongside him. The two big men feel each other out. As Gorilla says he thinks Bundy is now 500 pounds, despite what's being announced, and he wonders, how can Bundy climb the cage? Bundy grinds a side headlock as Jesse says he may be the one guy in the world that could get a submission with that hold. Gorilla, still all over the same ref, who gets a big shoulder block collision that Jim no-sells. Jim then tries one that doesn't budge Bundy, but Hillbilly comes firing out with punches and a headbutt. Bundy misses a kick and flops to his back as Hillbilly drops an elbow for two. Jim keeps firing away, but Bundy elbows him on a charge and kicks and chokes away at him. Jesse talks about the stupidity of the Hillbillies and is grossed out when Gorilla brings up Joyce. Bundy keeps clubbing away, knocking Jim to the floor, and then continues to batter him in the ring as we get some more mania talk. Bundy eats a boot on a charge, and then Jim wails away on him with chops, punches, and a back elbow. Jim gets a near fall, then punches away as Jesse says he's surprised that Bundy is having this much trouble. Bundy reverses a whip to the corner and buries him with an avalanche and the splash for the win. That was a really fun Haas match. I thought it made Bundy look great. He withstood a hot flurry and then quickly put the lights out in a blink of an eye. I thought Hillbilly looked good, too. He went toe-to-toe, was believable. And this was kind of a fun semi-squash, and I think it sets Bundy up for Mania in a nice way. I mean, you could have just had him murder someone, but I actually think it makes him look tougher, that he withstood some offense from a pretty tough competitor and then hangs in and gets the win. I went a star and a half here. Who's going first this time? Pete?
No, me, Scott.
Okay. I thought this was a pretty good match. I actually enjoyed it. And talk about the match, and then we can talk about Bundy being prepped for two. But go ahead.
I agree with you 100% on Bundy. I gave it a star and a half as well. You know what? As we really delved into him since he debuted at the beginning of last year, and through the whole journey he's been on, and kind of being boosted in as the number one contender at this moment, Bundy is a lot more mobile than people give him credit for. The guy knows how to bump. You know, he takes shots well. He sells well. He maneuvers a lot. He moves around. I mean, he moves around pretty good for 458 pounds. And
so we know some people that don't. Sorry.
Some people bump better than others, but and as for Hillbilly, I agree with you, JR, and I've kind of been trashing them a lot, just as much as you have. He worked pretty hard here. I think he did a pretty good job. I think he's kind of getting the whole in-ring thing and kind of knowing what to do on a match-by-match basis based on the story and the scenario and the psychology. But I thought it was tremendous. And getting to Bundy, just to kind of double up what I just said, he's ready for this. I mean, I know a lot of people thought that he jobbed a little bit too much at the end of 85 maybe, and they showed too much ass to Andre during the Jostle feud, the Jostle saga. But I was perfectly fine with it. And he definitely worked his ass off to be legit for April 7th. He bumps pretty good for a guy, you know, that size. Now, it's hard to compare him to, like, Andre, because Andre obviously has a medical condition that will obviously be exacerbated over time. But Bundy really knows how to even sell a guy who's that big and can fall well. And, I mean, we go back to that crazy bump he took last year. I agree with you 100%, JR, because you would think that you'd want to – I'm curious your thoughts too, Pete. You would think that he'd want to come in here and, you know, Jose Luis Rivera, some other ham and egger, and just pound him into dust. No, I kind of like that he had to grind his way through this match, particularly against somebody as unpredictable as Hillbilly, who's, you're not sure other than bear hug what he's actually going to do. And I thought it really made Bundy look even stronger than if he squashed some stiff. So kudos to Bundy. I think he's ready for this moment. And I gave it a star and a half. What do you think, Pete?
I gave it a star and a half, and something you guys didn't bring up, which is also important to this Bundy going over him, is that Hillbilly Jim is technically Hogan's protege because he gave him
the
boots. Yes, the boots. So, yeah, good point.
So there's that connection. So that makes it even more. So Hillbilly's there to want to fight for his buddy.
And they don't even raise that, Pete, which is amazing. That's an awesome point. They didn't even talk about it in the commentary. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't know the story, you wouldn't know from the commentary, which is terrible on them. And so Hillbilly's giving everything we can from it, and he's fighting. And the first thing I will say, I despise they opened up with a headlock, Bundy working a headlock. I was like, are you kidding me? you'd think they'd at least do, like, there's a shoulder block spot to try to show who's the biggest hoss. But no, they go to a headlock. I honestly could have gone 2 stars on this if they didn't open up with a headlock. But I love that absolutely what Scott was hitting on about the bumping and stuff, where we get that Bundy takes his big miss of a kick. He takes his kick and then he takes this huge bump and the crowd pops huge. And that's the other thing. Yeah, Bundy can bump, but he doesn't prostitute it. Where he's here, he did one big bump and he got the reaction he needed and made the most of the bump, as opposed to doing it 5 times and getting less and less and less reaction each and every time he took the bump. So he did it 1 time and made it mean something. And so the crowd was really hot into everything, and we had a real fun, you know, beefy hoss fight between the two guys. Yeah, I have no problem with this, and I thought it was a really smart way to do it, especially using Hillbilly, who has a connection to Hogan. He just didn't beat anybody; he beat Hogan's buddy.
And not only did they not even reference the Hogan part, they don't even reference, like, their past history, like, in the jostles and everything. Like, these guys fought, like, 3 months ago. Like, I mean, like, 3 months in a row, like, not that long ago in the fall. So, you know, it's surprising to me that they weren't, you know, that they weren't at least talking about it here. So, it was, whatever.
Mm. Yeah, I just had a thought. Oh, and I like that terminology, Pete. It sounds like what Gorilla had for lunch before. I think I'm going to have the beefy power meal. What was it? Beefy power match with a side of fries. So Bundy is ready to rock and roll for April 7th, and he will be, of course, in Los Angeles. All right, guys, why don't we take a break? We ate up, speaking of eating up beef, a good beefy portion of this show so far. JR, again, once again, kind of up and down. Some good moments, bad moments.
I mean, I don't think we've had anything that's I would consider like a good match. I mean, which is par for the course. So sometimes in the first half here, you at least catch one pretty solid. I mean, we've topped out, but we're kind of hot now. We've had a run of star and a half matches, which by the MSG scale is pretty good. So, you know, we didn't have like that run of duds in here, which is solid. It's been entertaining enough, thanks to the two, you know, All Japan women's matches. And, you know, Tonga Morocco was fun. So we've had some decent stuff mixed in here. I won't say anything that's, you know, making this on pace to be like one of our top shows, but it's not making it a stinker either.
No, and we've got a prospective top flight match coming up on the other side of the break. Pete, what do you think so far?
Yeah, it's... I will admit, because I watched this in 2 sittings. I watched this part of it while I was at the Hall of Fame, when I was in my hotel room, and it was like it was a chore to get through that, and it would have been a chore when I got home too today after work. But it's been solid. I mean, nothing like I haven't been like totally offended by anything where I'm like, gosh, that's the worst match I've ever seen. I thought we've seen some interesting stuff. Like, and I thought Bob Orton was a standout in the first half, and I thought Morocco. And I hate Morocco for the most part. I'm not a big fan of him. I thought he really impressed me here.
I've met you, Pete. You're hard to offend.
All right. So more from the garden coming up after this. But first, many words from Pete's wrestling wife. Because
it's just a little crush.
Paid for by the following. Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apuitas podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, longtime announcer with the WWE, now the voice of Ring of Honor Wrestling. No better place to be than right here on the Place to Be podcast. Make sure you tune in every week.
Get ready to bow to the master. Yeah, boy. Yo, you can try and hold me down if you want to. All the garbage I've been through, think I'm scared of you? I'll kill you. Don't got to care in the world of hell.
Nation, we are back taking a look at the March 16th, 1986 Madison Square Garden house show, along with our buddy Pete. And Pete, You're known, of course, for your podcast, Space City, taking a look at Houston wrestling. And when you and Johnny Sarrow settle into that starship and ride off into the Houston sun to talk about that wrestling, I know you're always on cloud nine. And speaking of starship, Scott, they have tonight's number one song, I believe, playing underneath us, right?
They do indeed, as we delve into this week's pop culture report for March 16th, 1986. Yes, in honor of Place to Be Nation member Steve Willey's wife. Our number one song this week is Starship with Sarah, and this is its first week is at number one, as it went up a spot from last week. Number two, speaking of some more great female rock stars, Little Heart with These Dreams, moving up the charts. At number three, Little Kyrie, Mr. Mister, we talked about that. Number four, Atlantic Star with Secret Lovers. Number five, moving down the chart, is our girl Whitney with How Will I Know. But trust me, more from her will come throughout the year.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. At number six, Little R.O.C.K. in the USA from John Cougar Mellencamp.
The best part of that song is the hot Australian chick from Hall Pass that says it. R.O.C.K. in the USA.
Yes.
It's not a good thing about that song.
Yes. And at number seven, D'Amato special, little J.A.D. special here, Little Falco with Rock Me Amadeus.
Amadeus, 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 Amadeus.
At number
now
seven.
Now that's from the movie, right? Amadeus?
No. No, there was a movie Amadeus.
I know, as I'm saying.
But the song had nothing to do with it. No.
Oh, okay.
No, it wasn't. No.
I know. I saw the
movie. It wasn't a modern day adaptation of Amadeus, no. At number eight, and I want to thank loyal PTB listener Mick Price, because he helped me out here, because Billboard's website didn't finish the name of the band. Number eight is Silent Running. And it's by Mike and the Mechanics, which is, of course, Mike Rutherford from Genesis. But it just said Mike. And I remember saying that last week. I'm like, who the hell's Mike? But I realize it's Mike and the Mechanics. And I know the song, but I forgot that the title that the song was called Silent Running. So I want to thank Mick Price for telling me that, because Billboard couldn't even have the time to put the whole band on here. Anyway, that was number eight. Number nine, King for a Day by the Thompson Twins. And at number 10, Nikita, not Koloff, by Elton John. So there's your Billboard Top 10, and the Billboard
Nikita
chart came out.
And Ivan.
Oh, it's a terrible song. Crusher Khrushchev. So there's your Top 10. That came out the day before, March 15th. A quick movies, JR. Only two this week that came out the previous Friday, March 14th. So not a lot to go over this week. Both made decent amount of money. The first one is a drama. It made $5.8 million, and it is called Crossroads. I wonder if it's the one I'm thinking of.
Dustin Rhodes?
Music movie. No, I'm going to cross you Dustin Rhodes. I don't know.
Is it Bone Thugs and Harmony?
It's not Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Okay. It's a coming-of-age musical drama inspired by the legend of blues musician Robert Johnson. Eugene Martone has a fascination for the blues, and he studies classical guitar at the Juilliard School of Performing Arts. Researching blues and guitar music brings famed Robert Johnson's mythically creative acclaim to his attention. Starring Ralph Macchio, John Seneca, Jamie Gertz, our girl, Joe Morton, Robert Judd, Steve Vai, Dennis Lipscomb, Harry Carey Jr., John Hancock. They brought him back from the dead for this one.
Wow. Did he sign the guitar in huge letters?
Right.
So
you mean Herbie Hancock.
I had a feeling this was the Ralph. This was the one I was thinking of that had Ralph Macchio in it. This was like Ralph Macchio trying to be like, I'm really not 14 years old. in any event. And the number one movie this week, pretty funny comedy. I remember this very well. Made $36.6 million, part of the awesome 80s Michael Keaton collection. It is called...
Batman.
No, you're 3 years off for Batman. Okay. That wasn't a comedy. Well, I guess depending on your point of view.
I would argue that it was, but yes, go ahead. Yeah.
It was called Gung Ho.
Gung Ho.
Good movie. That's actually a hilarious movie.
It is very funny.
And they actually did a spinoff of a television show for it.
Do you want to talk about the plot, Pete?
Nah, I can't even remember. Oh, I kind of remember it. I mean, it's just the Japanese people are coming into his city to buy their plants, and they want to do it a Japanese way, and then the Americans fought it, and then, they there was some, there was some backstory to Michael Keaton's character. Was this kind of, I can't remember it all that much, to tell you the truth.
Starring Gorilla Monsoon as the angry plant owner. maybe he had just seen this movie, and that explains his anger toward poor Bull and Dump. He had just seen this and got all fired up.
That had George Wendt in it from Cheers.
It did. Do you remember anyone else?
Oh, gosh. Michael Keaton, George Wendt. I was going to say Terry Garr, but that's from Mr. Mom. No, I don't remember anybody else.
John Turturro was in it. Mimi Rogers, Gede Watanabe, So Yamamura, Rick Overton, Michelle Johnson, Jerry Tondo. Both Bill Murray and Eddie Murphy turned down the role of Hunt Stevenson, which went to Michael Keaton. So,
I couldn't imagine either one of them playing that role besides Michael Keaton.
Gorilla was probably going to say, I'm not driving the Toyota dump.
I guarantee you he saw this movie and was all fired up about hating Japanese people or something. That's my guess.
A new minivan called the Mr. Dump. Okay. So those are the only two movies that came out the previous Friday. Okay. In sports, this weekend, in fact, this Sunday, they are concluding the second round of the 1986 NCAA tournament. So very quickly, here's who's going to the Sweet 16 that following weekend. The East Regional, which is going to be played at the Brendan Byrne Arena in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Number 1 seed Duke. Number 12 seed DePaul. Number 14 seed Cleveland State. Now, this is interesting because now in today's day and age, 13s and 14s are sprinkling up over the last like 5 or 6 years, 7 years of the tournament. But back in 1986, anybody lower than a 12 that ever won was mystifying. And the Vikings of Cleveland State, the 14 seed, upset 3rd-seeded Indiana in the first round and then beat 6th-seeded St. Joe's in the second round to get to the regionals. And they would play another team that was kind of on an upset run, number 7, Navy. Now, Navy. Of course, Navy had a certain guy on that team.
Mm-hmm.
A certain
admiral, yeah.
A certain admiral, yes. David Robinson was on that team. They were the 7th-seed, so they beat the lower-seed Tulsa in the first round and then upset number 2, Syracuse, in the second round. So it would be Duke versus DePaul and Cleveland State versus Navy in the East Regional. In the Midwest Regional, which would be played at Kemper Arena in Kansas City, top seed Kansas, so even back then they favored teams with regionals, taking on 5th-seeded Michigan State, and 6th-seeded North Carolina State would play number 7, Iowa State. The Southeast Regional, which would be played at the Omni in Atlanta, number 1, Kentucky would play number 5, Alabama, and number 11, LSU would play number 2, Georgia Tech. So all Southern teams, 3 of the 4 from the SEC. And finally, the West Regional, which would be played at the Summit in Houston, number 8, Auburn, who upset poor D'Amato's top-seeded Redmen of St. John's, blew them out, beat them by 16 in the second round. They would play number 4, UNLV, and number 3, North Carolina, would play number 2, Louisville. The Final Four that year was at Reunion Arena in Dallas, and on next week's WrestleMania 2, we'll let you know who won the 1986 NCAA tournament. But that's what the regionals are going to be like the following weekend. In the NBA, Pete, I don't think – the last time you were on, I think was just baseball, so I don't think I know any of your other teams. I'm assuming you're a Bulls fan?
No. I'm actually a Houston Rocket fan and a New York Knicks fan.
He sticks to that Houston thing, hardcore. Houston wrestling, Houston hardcore. Rockets.
All right, well – interesting because there were 6 games on this date. The Knicks were off, but we are going to mention the Rockets because the high scorer of the day was the captain himself, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had 43 points as the Lakers beat the Rockets at the Forum 116-111. Meanwhile, the Celtics beat Boston 118-101. Larry Bird had a double-double, 36 points and 14 rebounds. So that was kind of the highlights of the NBA. In the NHL, quickly, there was only 4 games. I'm assuming, what are you, a Houston Toros fan, Pete? I don't know if there's no Houston hockey team.
I'm actually a St. Louis Blues fan here.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, the Blues did not play on this night. There were only 4 games, but JR, the reason we have a matinee here in our building is because the ice will go down. The Rangers playing a night game this evening. They beat the New York Islanders by the score of 3-1. The other games, Blackhawks beat the Canucks, Flyers beat the Devils, and the Jets shut out Detroit. So, but the Blues, Pete, second place in the Norris Division at this moment, 4 points behind the Blackhawks. And finally, we have a birthday to talk about on
the
this date.
Of, in 1996, the birth of Austin 316. No, I'm
like... Well, that's true, yes. on this date, March 16th, 1986, a certain member of a 2006 heel faction was born. Anybody have any idea?
I saw it in Sutton's notes, so I'll back off.
Pete, what do you think? Think of a heel faction in WWE 2006.
Okay, I'm trying to think. 86 would make it.
06.
06.
06.
Triple H.
No.
Triple H was not born in 1986.
That would have made him 9 years old when he debuted.
Yeah, no, okay. He was born in utterly confused here. What year was he born? Oh, born
okay,
in 1986.
He was born on this date of our show, March 16th, 1986. And this guy, 30 years later, would be part of a heel faction in the WWE in 2006.
Randy Orton.
That is incorrect. Kenny Dykstra.
Ken Doan.
Nobody that important, Pete. I mean, I wasn't looking for, the greatest guy on the planet.
Yeah,
AK, one-fifth of the Spirit Squad was born on this date, March 16th, 1986.
Okay. So, let's get back to the action.
For your pop culture report.
All right, let's get back to the action where we continue a big feud that has seemingly been going on forever. I thought it was over last time, but apparently not. As Ricky Steamboat is taking on Mr. Fuji, no longer battling Magnus Morocco, at least. And Mr. Fuji, Scott, we've actually not talked about his background because he's never wrestled here on our show.
No.
Harry Fujiwara, born in Honolulu, Hawaii in May of 1934, was trained by Nick Bockwinkel and made his pro wrestling debut in December 1965 as Mr. Fujiwara. Won his first championship in less than a month in his career with the NWA Hawaii Tag Team titles with King Curtis. Shortened his name to Mr. Fuji before touring the other territories, including the Pacific Northwest, two runs in the WWWF, Georgia, and international territories in Puerto Rico, New Zealand, and Canada. Fuji made a return to the Northeast in 1981, WWF, teaming with Mr. Saito, having a singles feud with Tiger Chung Lee. Fuji held 14 different titles during his career, majority of them being tag team championships. Fuji retired in 1984 to become a manager. He would wrestle periodic matches, consistently voted Worst Manager of the Year category in the Wrestling Observer, winning the award 11 times between 1984 and 1995. It was not me voting, Scott.
I was going to say.
Pete, you are very well versed in the happenings of Mr. Fuji in the ring, specifically his tag team with Mr. Saito from your time on the Titans. Want to just take a few minutes to talk about Fuji as an in-ring worker?
Yeah, he commented Saito really well because Saito was the go-go-go type of guy, the ass-kicker. And Fuji was the guy who kind of brought the shtick and, like, the salt throwing, would always be doing the guy who was the devious one. So he was actually a really good counterpoint to Saito. And actually him, that team, which we dubbed Oriental Torture, that's a make-believe name. It's not a real tag team name. We're working against Rick Martel and Tony Garea, and they were having fantastic matches where – by that point, we thought the Oriental Torture might have been the second best tag team ever in the WWF at this point, up to that time. And when you really go through it, they might honestly be a top, before the 90s, legitimately, I think they might be one of the top 12 tag teams in the company of all time.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a strong take that Parv and I both agree on.
Yeah, no, I know Parv's very, very high on. I thought it was Devious Torture was Parv's name for it.
It was Devious Torture. I'm the one who actually came up with it, and I can't even remember what it was.
Gorilla called them Oriental Torture.
Yeah. Another thing that we got interesting was when we interviewed Tito Santana, he said that Fuji was really important on psychology, explaining it to him and helping him understand it.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah.
And of course, yes, all that's in the Titans of Wrestling archives on the Pro Wrestling Only feed on iTunes or PlayStation.com. And the interview with Tito is a great one, so check that out. This feud continues on. Of course, Fuji's been involved. I mean, he's helped Morocco a bunch. He's a tag steamboat. They've had the Kung Fu match on Saturday's main event. And here we go against this heated rivalry. Fuji with his usual douchebag smirk as he ambles out. Gorilla says he has some extra poundage around the midriff. Big pop for Steamer, as always, and he comes charging to the ring. Fuji does a salt ceremony as Gorilla wonders how many other salt packets are hidden on him. Gorilla goes in on all the fat jokes, calling him a Buddha and saying he looks like the before and after pictures out there with Steamboat and Fuji. Fuji lands one shot with Steamer, easily reverses that and goes to work, slamming Fuji hard to the mat. Steamboat works the arm as Gorilla talks about his WrestleMania 2 match against Hercules. Steamboat gets 2 on a sunset flip and then goes back to the arm as the fat comments just keep rolling on. Fuji lands a thrust to the throat and then lays in some karate shots, followed by a falling headbutt to the groin. Fuji works the traps, but Steamboat punches free, and Fuji cuts him down with a chop and goes back to the nerve hold. Steamboat breaks free, but Fuji blasts him with his knees as he tries for a big splash. Fuji keeps unloading karate strikes and then clotheslines Steamer across the top rope before going back to the nerve hold. The crowd rallies Steamboat as he punches and elbows out of the hold before leveling Fuji with a dropkick, and Fuji dodges a second one. Fuji goes back to the nerve hold, but Steamer punches out again and goes after a crisscross. He gets a crossbody for the win. I just had its moments, but that nerve hold was just too much, too much. I liked how Steamboat kept trying for a quick win, but Fuji kept dodging him, and then finally in the end he got caught. I thought Fuji seemed believable in control because of the way they structured the match, but there's really not much substance here, and hopefully this is it for their feud. Extra bump just because of Steamboat and how well he sold, and I thought they worked pretty well together. I went with 1 star here, Pete.
That's what I did, and by nerve hold, you mean nerve holds, right?
Multiple, plural. many nerve holds.
Yeah, there's so many, and... It's just Steamboat is just a giving worker, and he gave Fuji a lot here. And it wouldn't have bothered me so much, but then Fuji wasted it with nerve holds. I enjoyed Fuji working over Steamboat's neck, which goes right back to the angle of the hanging angle that started this whole entire feud. Mm-hmm. And so that made sense. But yeah, but the nerve holds were terrible. I enjoyed the salt throwing ceremony. I'm always a mark for that. Steamboat, of course, selling beautifully and making all Fuji stuff look credible. But again, it's a bunch of nerve holds. So I mean, you could be the greatest at anything, but it's still a nerve hold. Just pretty rough stuff. Star, pretty a waste of a match for Steamboat. I mean, we could have found somebody. I mean, I'd rather watch them see him work Jose Luis Rivera than Fuji at this point. I don't understand why you have him working a manager and actually giving the manager 70% of the match. I don't know about that either. Again, what a giving worker. That's all I can say.
Let me ask you this, Pete. Since you won't, and Scott, we'll save this because I have his talking points for next week. But since you won't be with us to talk about WrestleMania next week, what did you think of Steamboat? You know, his match, because they mentioned here how he's fighting Hercules at WrestleMania. With the length that they went with Morocco and Steamboat, were you surprised they didn't just hold off on that like one more month and have it at Mania? Because, you know, Morocco has that match with Paul Orndorff that really is kind of pointless, and Hercules and Steamboat's kind of pointless. Did you see it as like kind of a waste of both of those guys, considering the feud they had just been embroiled in?
In reality, yeah, but at the time, the WWF, you saw it in WrestleMania 1, you saw it in WrestleMania 2. They weren't blowing off, really, for the most part, weren't blowing off feuds at the Mania. It wasn't – that's not how they booked it at the time. It was weird because they were afraid of not – it was a George Scott thing because they were still warped in the old school mentality – where they thought they'd get more payoffs.
Yeah, but, you know, they had already blown it off, though. So I get that argument for, like, WrestleMania 1, where they continued feuds. Like, we've talked a lot about, like, Tito and Valentine not happening there.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking more here, where the feud is done regionally. Like, they're not going to fight anymore, really, on the house shows. So they've kind of gotten their money out of it. Why not just throw them out there one more time at Mania? And even if Steamboat quickly puts them away, it just seemed like kind of a waste of Steamboat, where, you know, he's ending up this great red-hot feud. He's had a great year. And he'll have a really good one coming up, another feud. And it seems like he's just stuck in between and gets just thrown onto the Mania card. I just thought maybe he deserved a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that actually makes sense. And but, you know, the other thing is, like, you know, how, like, you guys were talking about it earlier. And I mean, it's Bret Hart talked about it in his book how originally it was supposed to be him and Bret at Mania 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid they wouldn't have given him the time. I'm glad they had it at a house show.
Right, right.
At least they got the time to have a really good match. At Mania, if they gave him the Hercules time, they wouldn't have had time to steal WrestleMania 2 anyway. So, but I can see your point totally on the why not push the Morocco thing, at least come in with but maybe because the feud has been petered out so much and we've seen him work Fuji on Saturday night's main event, and so then it'd be anticlimactic to go back to it because it's been blown off. I think even I'm blown off on primetime wrestling at this point with the geese and stuff. So I don't know.
What did you think of the match, Scott? We can talk about the Steamboat match next week, but what did you think of this match tonight?
Right. It was okay. This is Fuji's WWF date or MSG debut here on our reboot, but he did wrestle at that one Saturday's main event when they had the handicap match.
True.
That was different though. He didn't really do that much in that match. I mean, here he pretty much had to do something, but I thought it was fine. Fuji's still pretty usable in this role. I mean, it's not anything ridiculously offensive, so I'm not. You know, Steamboat's just kind of setting himself up. And I do feel like, I don't want to say he's aimless, because, I mean, this feud with Morocco lasted, what, like 6 months, maybe even longer. So I was fine with it the way it was. I'm glad we didn't have like a Morocco run-in or anything and just end this thing. But I'm looking forward to what 86 holds for Steamboat. Because there's just so much, there's just so much around and, so many new guys coming in. We'll talk about one, very shortly. As Pete mentioned, and
spoiler.
Yeah. Thanks.
1986 spoiler.
So, I mean, it's, it,
you're spoiling movies for us. You're spoiling matches, Pete. What the hell? Blowing up 1986.
The match was fine. I mean, it served its purpose. I gave it, I gave it a star. It was fine. Nothing offensive. Gorilla, I'm getting really tired of Gorilla calling everybody else.
Nothing offensive besides the commentary, yeah. Nothing offensive.
He's calling everybody else fat, for God's sakes. I mean, of all people, you know. But, and Jesse's been pretty good tonight. He's been pretty straightforward. I've kind of enjoyed it. But, so here we go. So, Fuji, Steamboat gets the win, and I give it a star. Speaking of debuts, here's a big one.
Oh, really? You think so? Our next match features Lanny Poffo making his return to MSG, taking on the debuting Jake the Snake Roberts. Aurelian Smith Jr., better known throughout the wrestling world as Jake the Snake Roberts, started his career in Louisiana in 1974 as a wrestler and referee. Trained by his father, Grizzly Smith, along with Buck Robley and Moose Morawski, began making a name for himself in the Southern Territories in Mid-South and Mid-Atlantic and Georgia. It was in Georgia in 1983 he became an original member of Paul Ellering's Legion of Doom, alongside King Kong Bundy, Hawk Animal, Buzz Sawyer, Iron Sheik, Luke Graham, the original Sheik, and Killer Carl Krupp. It was a star Mid-South, winning the North American heavyweight title twice and the TV title in his waning days. Upon his jump to WWF, where he began as a heel, he'd eventually become, of course, one of its most popular superstars. Big debut here for Jake as he hits the company right before Mania, gets a quality opponent for his first match. It reminded me a lot of Steamboat last year. Came in, you know, it was weeks before Mania. We'll see him get thrown onto the Mania card. Good way to get him early exposure before he dives right into, you know, the heavy stuff right after this. Poffo tosses some frisbees and treats us to a poem talking about Jake's debut. We get our first look at Jake's sack, and you can see the snake moving around in there. Jake puts Lanny down with shoulder block to start, and Poffo comes back with a pair of drop kicks that sends Jake to the floor. Gorilla and Jesse.
Hold on. You know how pornographic you sounded? You see Jake's sack moving around, and he's...
You underestimate me, Pete. Gorilla and Jesse talk about how Jake moves and slithers like a snake. Jake grabs the arm as he comes back, but Poffo backflips out of the hold and grabs the arm himself. Lanny gets a crossbody for two as Jake keeps trying to lunge for the sack. Gorilla thinks he's entrancing the bag or vice versa. Jake comes back with a shoulder block to the gut and then crushes Poffo with a gut breaker and goes to work on the midsection. Jake slows things down with a chin lock and keeps pounding the midsection, but Jake drops his head on a whip. And Lanny boots him in the grill. Lanny fires away and sends Jake outside with a back body drop. And then the move to end all moves. Poffo tries for a springboard dive, but slips on the ropes and falls hard on the floor with a thud, a hard thud. Jesse talks about the risks of those moves as Jake slings Poffo back to the floor again. Jake follows him out, arm drags him hard on the floor. Poffo's taking a beating here. He comes back in, but Jake plants him with a DDT for the strong win. Jake grabs his sack and unleashes his snake all over Poffo to the oohs and ahs. Fun little match that was amped up by Poffo's botch, I thought, and Jake's nasty hip toss on the floor, which may be one of the nastiest bumps we've seen on these shows so far, Scott. But a strong debut. You can tell Jake has a star presence. Smart to debut him here and sneak him into Mania. I went a star and a half, mainly for the couple of bumps and then the finish and the crowd really being into the oohing and ahing the snake and all that. So why don't you reach deep into your sack and unload your thoughts on us, Scott.
Well, I was about to say you made a very exaggerated point that Jake wins the match, then grabs his sack. But Jake is one of those guys, and I mean, I remember watching some stuff in Georgia, and obviously, Pete, I know you watched a lot of it as well. He just has this aura about him. He gets it. You know, he understands what he has to do. He understands how to tell a story. And here he is making his debut in the building, and he had it down. At one point, he was almost like treating the bag almost like a source of power. At one point, kind of like a character that would be about 4 years down the line that would do the same thing with another inanimate object. This was not inanimate, though. We're talking about a live animal in a bag. But he was having this, trying to like take power from it, and he just understood crowds and energy and what story needed to be told in this environment. Lanny does that blown spot. I don't know if that was on purpose or if he just screwed it up, but I think he screwed it up. I don't think that was. Do you think that was on? I don't know, Pete.
That was a screw up.
Yeah, he clearly screwed that up. Yeah. I didn't think that was planned at all. Because I know, I know they were trying to sell when he was kind of when Poffa was kind of all kind of screwed up outside, and then he kind of dragged him in, dropped the DDT.
No, I don't. If he's clearly, trying to buy it, like, yeah, he's not botching.
No, he clearly blew that. Slips, yeah, he clearly blew that.
That was almost like he almost killed himself on that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he blew that big time. Yeah, I gave it a star and a half as well. And Jake really understands it. And you'll see that a lot over the next, six years he's here. He just gets it. And he's one of those guys that just, may not be the greatest worker on the planet. And we'll see him in the ring, with good workers throw a stinker in terms of work rate. But he does know how to tell a story to get to that point. And you see a piece, a small snapshot of that in this match. Yeah, I gave it a star. I gave it a star and a half, and I liked it a lot. What'd you think, Pete?
Yeah, I give it a star and a quarter. And he's a guy I've always enjoyed watching. And I'm with you. He might not always have the greatest match, but there's always something you find interesting, like here him playing off the bag of it with the snake in it, and that would become a trope he would do a lot in the WWF. He didn't have the bag in the territories. But he'd find other ways to do. But there was always – he'd always a guy. Every house show I've seen live or any house show I'd see back on tape, there was always something in a match that was like just something you'd always remember coming out of that show, where even if – especially on a lot of these WWF shows where they don't have that – the work rate isn't all that deep, he'd stand out because of something he'd do. You'd leave it remembering that spot. Or he was also a master of always keeping his heat. He might lose, but you'd never remember he lost because he'd end up dropping the DDT on somebody. So he was just a master of being able to do a job, but people don't remember he did the job because he's actually the one leaving out on top type of thing. But here, I enjoyed all the early part of the match. I really liked it. I thought Poffa was really good early on, working the arm and actually getting a nice shine on Jake, and Jake looks like he's trying to get the heat, but then Poffo takes control again. I really enjoyed the early part, but once Poffo almost killed himself, it just took me out of the match a little bit because I was really worried about him. And then we went right wham bam thank you man with the DDT and stuff. But then Jake
doubles down on that bump by that nasty arm drag on the floor, I was like, Jesus, yeah. Give the fucking guy a break. He almost just killed himself.
Exactly. And I can totally see that. I mean, I get it. But I was just so concerned. Yeah. And then you follow that up, you're like, holy moly. But really good stuff. And again, just good moments, just little things that Jake does that you just remember. And that's what makes him so good.
We'll be talking much more about him in the weeks and months to come, Scott. So we go backstage. Gorilla Monsoon is with Randy Savage. Gorilla calls him out for how he cheated to defeat Tito Santana in Boston for the Intercontinental title. Savage says that's a lie. He said it was a straight right hand that did it, and that's all. He said he beat the Beaner in Beantown. Gorilla asks where Liz is, and Savage says she isn't here, but he'll beat Tito in his foolish dream tonight because it's pride that's bringing Tito here. Gorilla says Tito's dangerous, but Savage says he doesn't believe he can take the title and he just wants to hurt him. Savage says MSG is his home and he calls Gorilla a liar. And that brings us to our next match, which is a big Intercontinental title rematch between two of the greats, Tito Santana and Randy Savage. Tito's already in the ring. Savage and Liz get their big star entrance, looking fantastic as always. They get some cheers from MSG as well now, Scott. Tito's fired up and won't back off to let Savage in the ring until the ref blocks him. Jesse says Tito's the type of guy that would crack Liz if he can't get a shot at Savage. Savage's nonstop energy as he disrobes and plays to the crowd and then bolts right back out to the ring as the bell sounds. Tito chases him. The ref stops Tito from chasing him outside, and Jesse likes how the ref is exerting his power, but Gorilla says he's killing Tito's momentum. Tito starts chasing Savage in and out of the ring and finally catches him and hammers away on the floor, running Savage to the barricade and shoving him back into the ring. Jesse calls for a DQ as Tito kicks and punches away as the crowd is going nuts. Tito sends Savage back outside with an atomic drop as Savage is all discombobulated. Tito goes out and pitches him back inside and rattles his head and keeps pounding him all over the ring. Tito mounts Savage in the corner, but Macho catches him with an inverted atomic drop to cut his momentum. Savage goes to work with his manic offense, mauling Tito with strikes and grabbing near falls. Tito punches his way back into it, hits a shin breaker, and tries for figure four, but Savage blocks it and yanks Tito to the floor. Savage meets him out there with a double axe blow off the top as Jesse says Savage to try for a countout win. The crowd loudly rallies Tito as Savage keeps working him over, and Tito fights his way back into the ring, but Savage cuts him down with a clothesline for two. Savage heads up top but misses an elbow as Tito rolls away. Tito blasts him with a shoulder block and fires away as the crowd is just going crazy. Savage keeps dodging the figure four, but Tito's all over him and nearly gets the hold on. But Savage goes to the eyes. Savage regroups outside as Tito chases, but walks right into a hard kick in the gut. Savage batters him on the floor and pitches him inside, but Tito hits him with the flying forearm. Tito quickly acts and gets the figure four, and the crowd is just going batshit right now, ballistic. Savage is nowhere to go. Liz is desperate, and Savage, being the genius heel that he is, grabs the referee and throws him into Tito for the DQ to save his title. The crowd cheers Tito winning, but Jesse laughs, but he also says it keeps Tito as a number one contender because he won the match. Savage escapes with the belt. Gorilla says the title should change hands on blatant DQs like that, but I loved it. I love that awesome heel finish. It pisses off everyone. It's brilliant work. I thought this was a great match with tons of action and fire, a molten hot crowd. I thought Tito showed great fire out there. Savage was on the defensive the whole time, and I thought it was top-notch commentary, too. So I went 4 stars on this, Pete.
So did I. And let me touch on that finish, too, where they get we get the DQ. And I think they come back, and I might be wrong, but you guys can. I know you guys are gonna be watching it sooner than later. I want to say they come back with Bruno as special referee in March, and then I think in April they go to a no DQ match. So the finish actually plays into the longer, bigger story of what they're doing, and it's kind of like we see it nowadays on the WWE Network because they are extending feuds because they're. The business model has changed where it's streaming and we're paying $9.99 for pay-per-views, and so they don't want to burn through matches like they used to because they needed to get your $39 or $49.99. Mm-hmm. Now they'll, like we saw with KO and Styles this past on Sunday, they went with the DQ because they're going to go further. We've seen it ever since I said we're going to see a lot more of. It's going to get the template where I compared it to MSG house shows where you'd get like this crap finish at one point because they're building to bigger stips or bigger other things on the network. It's going to be running it more like a house show, old school house show business, which you're now seeing. And we see it here as an example of Savage getting this title DQ'd and then they build to the next two stips. I love this match. It's all energy. I mean, Savage is this like manic guy, and he's just full of energy. Tito's one of the all-time best feud workers, where you could just tell he's in a feud because everything he does looks mean. It looks nasty. Even if it comes off a little clumsy, like I think at one point his flying forearm looked a little clumsy. It still added a little bit to it because it's not refined. It looks like these two legitimately look like they hate each other. Mm-hmm. I felt like with Tito with the Valentine feud, it's the same thing.
And the same with Savage and Hogan that we've seen too. Like both guys are great at that.
Exactly. And I mean, I think Tito with the Valentine feud is, to me, it's like the best feud in the 80s that WWF did. I think Savage and Tito is a top 5 or 10 feud. And, I mean, Savage is a genius, and these guys just they come across, they don't like each other, and the intensity builds and builds and builds, and it's just great, and the crowd reacted beautifully. I mean, the heat for this match was off the charts. Excellent, excellent piece of work from both guys, and because of this finish, they're going to come back, if I'm not mistaken, with that match and draw more money. So that's the end of that's the name of the game.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I noticed, I gave it 4 stars, and I watched all three matches in this hub over the last month. I watched their match the rematch at Boston Garden. I watched the match at the Spectrum, and then I watched this one. And we talk about Tito a lot. But when it came to this feud, I think a lot of, on the surface, you think about, you know, the screw job on February 8th and the, you know, the thing in whatever, the bulwark handle or whatever the fuck was in his pants and whatever Savage used to win. You and then you forget about it. No, I said bulwark.
Oh.
Bullworth.
Yeah, the guy.
Warren Beatty.
Yeah, in his pants.
Ghetto
superstar.
And you forget about it. And then you think that that Savage moves on to who his opponent will be next Monday, sadly. But you don't remember, you don't think that, you know, Tito got a boatload of rematches and they just got better and better and better and better and culminate here with what I think is the best of the best they've ever had. And what I like is that what made this match great is a lot of guys that don't totally have that kind of experience that Tito has kind of let Savage dictate the whole running around the ring and stalling and killing time and his old, you know, the Memphis shtick he's been used to. Even Hogan kind of hesitated before, you know, jumping into the deep end of the pool in that aspect. But Tito realized, I gotta amp this sucker up. So instead of letting Savage roam around and kill time and everything, he went after him. Mm. And they're running around the ring frenetically. Crowd went nuts and realized, wow, this worked. And remember, he caught Savage before he got in the ring. And Gorilla goes, oh, we're about to get X-rated. Where's Naked Dump? No. And, you know, and Tito got it. So your guys are both – you're exactly right. Tito just got it. And I don't think he gets enough credit for it at this point in his career. I think everybody gives him credit for Valentine because the Hammer feud in 85 was a lot more high profile. Whereas here, a lot of people thought that Savage wins it and Tito gets dumped to the mid-card and Savage goes on the rocket ship. Not necessarily. So I would watch. I would find on YouTube. All three shows are there. The Boston Garden rematch, which was March 8th. The Spectrum match, which I think was the 7th. It might have been the day before. And then this one. Watch all three of those. And slowly but surely, the chemistry just got better and better and better. And the crowds were red hot. And Tito just got it. He knew how to take Savage's approach to the match and hit the gas on it. And that's why this is the match of the night. And Tito, I mean, I always was a Tito fan anyway, but I've gained, since we've rebooted JR, I've gained a whole new respect for Tito at this point. Because he really, at a time when you didn't really remember him with Savage, really hit the pedal and got what Savage was trying to do. And unfortunately, the next feud, it fucking didn't happen. But this was tremendous. 4 stars. He was taken forever. I mean, he had to grab like the entire fucking ref's crotch to shove him into Tito in the middle of the figure four. It was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. 4 stars. Tremendous match. I think it was a glimpse of what great Savage would be. Right now we're in the real good Savage phase. But unfortunately he would go back to opponents that couldn't get more out of him than you could have. Tito on this night, you saw a glimpse of what would be the great Savage. Because he knew what to do with him. He knew what to do with all the stalling and all the running around the ring and all that kind of stuff. He got it. Kudos to Tito on that.
Yeah, well, another match they should check out is there's a one from Toronto that's actually incredible between the two of them.
Mm. Yeah, when they went around this whole loop, they were on fire. Absolutely on fire. And at the time, you thought maybe Tito would win it back. You weren't thinking about it. But this was pretty amazing that Tito just kept it going.
Yeah.
Now, you know what else is pretty amazing? This next interview, where Gorilla Monsoon is with the Haiti Kid. And Gorilla has Haiti Kid on his lap. and Hades starts to talk about Piper. Gorilla cuts him off and explains what Kid is trying to say. He's like, Hades keeps mumbling shit about Piper, and Gorilla just cuts him off and explains it for him. Hades then runs through all the events that's happened with Gorilla prompting him the whole way through. Just kind of been, and then he did this, and then he did that, right? Hades calls Mr. T a beautiful man and tells Piper that T will make him pay for his actions on April 7th. Any quick thoughts, Pete, on Hades Kid sitting on Gorilla's lap?
I'm laughing my ass off because it's hilarious, for starters. And then Gorilla, it reminded me in a way because back in the day in Texas, the Von Erichs sometimes would be fucked up when Bruiser Brody was their booker. And so Brody, because his crew was so drug-addled, he'd end up having to cut promos for the guys, even though he had no reason to be out there, but he ended up cutting it for him. And we see Gorilla, because the Haiti Kid just, his English isn't strong, having to have to, and he doesn't recite lines very well either. And Gorilla has to save him while he's, it was just creepy, the whole entire thing.
Oh, so good.
Oh, jeez.
All right, we then go back to the ring where the Fink promotes the entire WrestleMania 2 card, runs the whole thing down, and tells fans to watch Championship Wrestling to track down their local closed-circuit locations. I mean, he lists everything, the celebrities, every match, everyone in the Battle Royal. I mean, just everything to do with WrestleMania 2. He runs down the entire thing here. So then we head back to the ring for some mighty midget wrestling action, we're told.
Let me ask you guys a question. Yeah. Did Uncle Elmer get the biggest reaction out of everything that he announced?
Oh, God. Yeah, I guess, right? Yeah, he did. Yeah, they loved him. The MSG loved these fucking hillbillies. They really did. They loved them all.
Please. Sad. All right.
So the Haiti Kid is taking on Dana Carpenter. Not much information on the man known as Dana Magazoo, who wrestled under the name Dana Carpenter. Midget wrestler started his career in 1982 after graduating high school, trained by Killer Kowalski. Wrestling career ended, worked as a police dispatcher for several small towns in Massachusetts and for the office of the chief medical examiner in Boston, passed away at age 45. May of 2009. So, there you go. Dana Carpenter, the most random midget wrestler name ever. Like, they usually have some kind of gimmick, like, name. You know, they're all really gimmicked up, but Dana Carpenter. Not the name you'd imagine for a midget. Kid gets a nice pop. Gorilla asks if Carpenter gets... He says if... And I think he used this joke before with another midget, but he says if Carpenter gets any bigger, he'll be looking for a new line of work. Jesse says Gorilla is a ventriloquist with Haiti Kid because he can't talk on his own. We get the standard midget antics as Jesse keeps prodding Gorilla about the interview, and Gorilla says he feels bad about happening with the little guy. Gorilla says after he sat on his lap, he thinks he feels more like 101 pounds, not 99. They talk about Kid's mohawk, courtesy of Piper. The ref gets involved in all the shenanigans, too, and the crowd, as always, eats up the hijinks. Gorilla rips the ref for getting so involved. He's going to rip the ref even this fucking match, because the ref bites Haiti Kid in retaliation to Kid biting him. They go on for a while with the usual stick until Haiti Kid puts him away with an airplane spin and a dropkick. Usual midget fare, just laughs and killing time, and I guess pushing Piper T in a way. I went half star, as usual, for my standard midget grade. Scott, what did you think of this one?
I, as everyone very well knows here at Place to Be Nation and the 449 previous episodes of the Place to Be podcast, at some point I mentioned how much I fucking hate midget wrestling. But this easily had to have been the most aggravating, like, 10 minutes of my life watching wrestling. I understand comedy midget matches. This is shit. And I totally agree with Gorilla on trashing the whole thing, referee included. I don't understand. Like, I get the whole break, you know, Dana Carpenter putting his foot on the ropes, and you knew the move was coming, he's going to drop him. But did the referee have to bite his ass? I mean, I don't get it. And then the wrestlers kicked the ref out of the ring. The whole thing sucked. It was aggravating. It was annoying. And incidentally, you mentioned before, JR, when you were recapping our build to this show, I don't know if Haiti Kid was supposed to be the planned guest of that Piper's Pit, because Haiti Kid, I watched that episode of Championship Wrestling, and Haiti Kid wrestles a match, and then Piper and Orton go grab him, almost like kidnapping him out of the ring, then tie him up and shave his head. So I don't know if he was supposed to be a guest, and they just didn't feel like waiting, or if they hijacked him. I don't know what it was, but this was garbage. I mean, I understand comedy for the sake of comedy, and I understand spelling the crowd till the last match. I understand that. This was idiotic. And I was, for the only time of the night, I was so happy Gorilla was in a rotten mood and was trashing this referee. Because it was a mess. It wasn't even fun comedy. It was just, it was garbage. And I just, I lost my mind. And if I never watch another fucking midget match on the stretch again, I'd be perfectly happy. Utter nonsense. And not because, oh, I know we need our, 5 minutes of comedy fair. Screw that. This is a dud. And it doesn't get the obligatory half star for me. It doesn't even earn it. It's just utter. The referee biting his butt? I mean, come on. What kind of nonsense is that? What do you think, Pete?
I give it a quarter star. I'm with you because the comedy didn't work for me at all. It felt really contrived, and it didn't feel organic at all. I've been watching a lot of good midget wrestling on Houston, on the Houston footage, and Paul Bosch is also excellent on the commentary explaining the difference between a midget and a dwarf and all this stuff, which adds to it. But
really?
Yeah, it's awesome. And their comedy spots are more organic on there. And yeah, the comedy sport. How organic can a comedy spot be? He's much more organic than what we saw here. When you have ass biting, you see the ref. The catch the midget spot went way too long. Yeah, you lose your gag after the second time. I think they did it 6-7 times. For the ref then to turn on the Heidi kid and start biting him. Yeah, it was just a train wreck, absolute train wreck of midget wrestling. And I've come to appreciate him, but here it was just terrible, terrible.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. And the referees really all do look like they're drunk tonight. Like, sometimes they're just standing around, they walk around like a little circle, and they're looking up, they all stooging around. It was the pits. The officiating tonight was just bad all around. I mean, Gorilla didn't have to point it out like every 10 seconds, but the officiating was pretty abysmal tonight in almost every match on the show. Let's hope it's not this main event, JR, because you're on a roll here. You're all-time favorite manager. Bad enough you had to watch Fuji wrestle tonight. Now you're really getting the bonus.
Yeah. Well, I'm coming around a little bit, I'll say that. So main event time, as the British Bulldogs are teaming with Lou Albano to take on the Dream Team and Johnny V. I don't think, have we seen Johnny V wrestle yet, Scott? No? Okay. I guess that's a no. He's gone. So, anyway, I was going to give his background. I don't remember if we've already given it, but we're running long, so it's not that important. A good main event here for one last hard sell for the tag title match at WrestleMania 2, a continuation of what's been a great feud. Gorilla puts over the Bulldogs' bodies and says they're speed merchants. Davey and Hammer start things off with feeling out. Davey eventually hits an atomic drop to take control. Dynamite and Albano land a shot in on Hammer from the corner, but then Lou comes in from the ring and pops him there too. Jesse is all over Gorilla for his double standards as Dynamite comes in and plants Hammer with a shoulder block and a headbutt and some forearms. Albano tags in and works the arm and quickly tags back out to Davey, who comes in off the top of the blow. Davey works the arm, but Hammer breaks the hold of the backbreaker and tags in Beefcake, who grabs a side headlock and punches away. Johnny V tags in and lands a few shots and runs Davey into the boots of his men. Hammer tags in and clobbers Davey off the top rope and goes to a chinlock. Davey breaks free and tags in Dynamite, but Hammer works him over with some hard forearms. Dynamite turns things around and levels Hammer in the corner. Hammer makes a comeback, gets slammed off the top rope. Beefcake gets the tag and levels Dynamite to keep him in the ring and then baits in Davey and Albano, triggering a brawl as Gorilla just rips the ref again for standing around and watching it. Things reset as Beefcake gets two counts on a swinging neckbreaker and a nice vertical suplex. Johnny V tags in and kicks and elbows away in the corner and then chokes and claws at Dynamite. Valentine comes in and drops Dynamite with a nasty forward pile driver for two. Jesse is shocked that Kid is hanging in here as Hammer gets to figure four, but Albano comes in and breaks it up, which pisses off Jesse. Johnny V comes in, but Davey gets the tag and puts a beating on everyone before dropping Johnny V with a running power slam. Valentine makes a save, and the brawl continues as Albano and V slug away. Davey works over Hammer, but drops his head, and Hammer kicks him hard in the face. Davey blocks a suplex and gets one of his own, but Johnny V makes the save. Dynamite tags in and headbutts Hammer, and they keep working him over in the corner. Davey tags in, gets a small package for two as Gorilla just shits all over the ref again for his bad positioning on the count. Dynamite tags back in. They land a double clothesline. Johnny V makes a save for Hammer during the pin attempts. and that triggers another big brawl, and Dynamite ends up rolling up Beefcake for the win during the chaos, and both Jesse and Gorilla bitched that he wasn't the legal man. The crowd liked that finish, but it was pretty confusing. The whole match was kind of choppy, and the ref was a big reason, again, just all over the place with no control, and it goes to show you how important a referee is. You know, to talk about another show here on the site, Jeff Learns Wrestling, on episode 2, my buddy Jeff asked, like, he thought referees are just window dressing, and I kind of explained the importance of a referee to a match. And shit like this is where it shows, where this guy just had no clue what was going on and is such a big distraction in the match and causes things to get chaotic. When you have a great ref, as the adage goes, you don't even know he's there. So, no control. Good main event, though. Good main event tonight to set up WrestleMania 2's tag title match. Features some hard-hitting offense in there. Solid, but nothing that stands out. I like that they made it a wild brawl again, because that sets up the two-referee gimmick for WrestleMania that they've mentioned. Pete, I went 2.5 stars on this one.
I went 2. And I hope Johnny V and Beefcake gave Valentine their checks, because he did 90% of the work for his team tonight. Everything that was memorable was all bad for him. All his strikes looked good. Everything he did looked credible. I enjoyed Dynamite as the face in peril. I thought he worked really well. I enjoyed the do-si-do finish part of it. But man, it was, yeah, the structure was just wanky, because it was like there was shine and cutoffs, and it just didn't seem like they were following a narrative very well. A little backstory here. Years ago, Dynamite Kid wrote a book, and he talks about their six-man matches and how Captain Lou every night would ask, how many would be in the crowd, kid? 5,000, 6,000? He's like, yes, Captain. And at the end of the week, or whenever the paycheck came out, Captain Lou got his normal pay as a manager. He didn't get any extra money. He thought he was going to get extra pay for headlining shows that was drawing money and stuff. He thought he was going to get extra money, and that ended up leaving. That's why he ends up getting fired pretty close to the end of this run here. And this is like the straw that broke the camel's back when he went and demanded more money from Vince on payouts for house shows that he was headlining. So, yeah.
Well, I'm not going to miss him. I'll say that. Even though I've turned the corner on him a bit.
Yeah, he's better back in the day. He's better as a promo guy. But, yeah, like you can see, look at that. That was a weak-looking arm ringer he's doing and holding it out there. It looked like anyone could break loose from it. Very, I don't want to say business exposing, because I hate that term, but it was very fake looking. But, you know, solid, you know, enough star power to let everyone go home happy with the faces going over.
You back, Scott?
I am there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the I definitely think this was a good prelude to WrestleMania 2. And the manager situation was a little wonky, and the crowd was hot for it. Valentine is just in a groove right now, and he's really helping these you know, relative newbies in the ring. Get back to the commentary. I noticed Jesse starts to call Gorilla out for his inconsistencies on faces and heels, cheating. And you see that more and more as time progresses, where Gorilla will say something and Jesse will be like, yeah, but if that was Beefcake doing it, you would have said something else. And you know you would have. And Gorilla almost, it's like the first time where Gorilla's almost like, yeah, because he would have. And I'm sure that pisses Vince off, that you're not supposed to make the face look stupid. And at times he did. But for the most part, I really enjoyed the match. You know, they do make a point to really, you know, get the Bulldogs over as legit contenders, and they've had big wins. I thought this was a good ending to the show. I also gave it 2 stars. I thought it worked well. Crowd was hot. I feel like they preserved their energy for this end of the show, because they didn't have really a lot to cheer about early on in the show. So I felt they did a pretty good job on the back end. So I give it 2 stars. That was a good ending to the show. And we're, 3 weeks away from the big show. And I believe there's a couple of house shows left on the circuit locally. I believe we have a Maple Leaf Garden show left. I was looking ahead. I think there's a Maple Leaf Garden show left. I think there's actually a Spectrum show left, too, before we get to WrestleMania 2. So there's a lot more time for honing the card and and boosting guys, and they got some time to continue working it. But they're ready. They're ready. The card's set, and everybody's in their place, and we're ready to rock and roll. So that was a pretty good ending to the show.
All right. Why don't we get into our awards to wrap up the show here tonight? As always, yeah. We start with the match of the night, Scott. I went with Santana Savage. I mean, to me, that's a no-brainer.
No, there's no doubt. No, I agree 100%.
No-brainer.
All right. The Cousin Jr., which is the worst match of the night, I went with Moondog Spot and Steve Yaffe.
Oh, I'm giving it to the midgets. It's atrocious.
I'm going midgets myself.
Terrible.
Poor Dana Carpenter.
Give Stevie Yaffe.
This is a big moment.
Poor Dana Carpenter.
MVP of the night, I went with Tito Santana. I actually thought he looked the best. I thought he looked better than Savage in that match, and that was the best match of the night. I thought he worked his ass off. He looked crisp and on point, and he was the most enjoyable part of the show for me. What'd you think, Scott?
Oh, I agree with Tito 100%. Like I won't repeat my comments again, but Tito just got it, and this Savage feud did it for me. That he deserves that much credit. So definitely Tito, Pete.
Yeah, I'm with Tito, and it's a shame because this after this feud, this is really his, like, I don't want to say swan song, but it's his last really meat and potatoes blood feud. I mean, he ends up having other feuds, but they're not at this level, and this is a great way to go out on top like that, and he's a stud. That's all there is to it.
All right, the Gator Wolf Award for the worst worker of the night. I went with Steve Yaffe again for this one because I thought he just was the worst of all these guys out here.
George Wells, he's the pits. I can't give it to the I can't give individual workers to the midgets. That's too much. But George Wells is just atrocious.
Pete,
yeah, George Wells is a complete load, man. You got me kidding me? Yeah.
He's a load.
Yeah,
he's a dump.
You guys are Stevie Yaffe jock sniffers, man. Fucking honks for Stevie.
Whatever, man. How you can give that to when George Wells is on the card?
Yeah, why don't you put yourself in
I'd rather watch Wells slamming guys around than Yaffe lumbering around like a clown.
Yourself. Yeah, but those guys are getting slammed. They're like, God, this is hard work.
That's all right. It's better than watching Yaffe roll around like an idiot on the mat. All right, best moment of the show. I went with Tito's figure four. I thought the crowd was fucking going bananas. And then right when they're about to explode, Savage just throws the ref into Tito for the DQ. I thought that was easily the best moment of the night.
Yep, I agree, 100%. Yep.
My favorite moment was the giant swing in the tag match. I thought that thing was just dynamite. And she didn't get a whole lot of rotations, but the speed she got on that giant swing, I was like, I just went nuts over it.
Okay. Let's see here. So next we have the Junior Mr. Universe Award, which is for the most roided up guy of the night. And I went with the British Bulldogs on this evening, Scott.
Well, I half agree. I thought Davey Boy looked fine, but excuse me. Dynamite was holy shit. I don't know what the hell he cycled. He looked bigger than Davey Boy.
Yeah, he was
Davey Boy looked fine. Davey Boy looked no different than he normally does, but Dynamite literally looked like he was about to.
Well, I wouldn't call it fine. I mean, they both looked fucking massive. So, but I agree. Dynamite was out of control. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, you have to. I mean, Dynamite. I mean, the guy's in a wheelchair, and Davey Boy's dead. we don't need even that.
In other words, one is and one might as well be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, one basically know? is dead inside. And yeah.
Obviously, steroids had a lot to do with both cases, so I will go with the Bulldogs and feel comfortable with that call.
All right, I went. I had a hard time grading this one. You know, I thought about some of our better ones and where we're at, and. Like, at one moment I felt that was too high, and then I'm like, well, maybe I'm too low. And I just kind of settled in the middle, because, I mean, Savage Tito was just that good. There was no real dreck on this. I mean, the midgets was terrible, but to me it's offset by the Haiti Kid interview. And then the laughs that come during the match with it. Yeah, I thought the commentary, as much of a train wreck as it was, at least propped up some of those other matches. You get the novelty of the All Japan women. So I went 5 out of 10. I mean, even though we really only had one like great match and not much else, I thought the ancillary stuff kind of kept us afloat for me. Even though it was kind of a slog of a show, I thought there was enough here to make it, you know, maybe in the upper half of ones we've watched. What did you have, Pete, out of 10?
Yeah, I'd give it a 5, solid 5. I mean, you have one really, a really strong match, and then a lot of the stuff that was there for the most part, nothing hit 3 stars. So, I mean, Tito and Randy didn't have a whole lot of support, just people there showing up and just kind of pushing Mania 2 forward is really where they're going right now. And so that's definitely the vibe I got off the show.
What do you think, Scott, for your grade?
Yeah, I agree. Let's make it clean sweep. I also went with 5. As abysmally bad as Siviafi, George Wells, and those fucking midgets, Tito and Savage were fantastic. The main event was really good. I was a little disappointed in Morocco Tonga, but it wasn't awful. Pretty much straight down the middle.
Of all these shows we've done since the reboot, Scott, only 3 times we've agreed on a grade for the overall show. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. There you go. Yeah, this one's hard. Yeah, this one you can't. I wasn't going to go too far low. It wasn't that bad a show. But if you take Tito Savage off, I mean, I probably would have given this like a 3.5 or a 4.
Maybe lower.
Oh, yeah. That was a show saver right now.
Yeah, that would have. Yeah, I would have maybe given it a 3.5 out of charity, but Savage Tito makes it a 5. Otherwise, the builds were fine, but a lot of the in-ring stuff was pretty awful.
All right, so why don't we wrap things up? We will be back next Monday with WrestleMania 2. Mr. John Arsenio D'Amato will be in the house, of course.
Yes.
He was in his young, early 30s, I think, when that show was on, so he's excited to relive it. He sent me the picture today of the clamshell tape that he was breaking out to watch it. So he's fired up. He's ready to go. So Johnny will be here next Monday night, looking forward to his first trip in a while here on the Place to Be main voyage podcast outside of a Christmas special. Sure. So it'd be good to have Mr. D'Amato here in the house. Pete, anything you want to plug coming up?
Follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. And if you guys have time, check out Space City and NWA On Demand podcast. And This Week in Wrestling, where I talk more about the current indie scene or the Japanese scene or the English scene of indie of wrestling that's under really the WWE umbrella, unless you consider NXT. So check those out if you have time.
Awesome. And, of course, subscribe to all of our feeds on iTunes, Pro Wrestling Only, PlayStation Wrestling, PlayStation Pop. Leave us comments. Leave us ratings. That helps. PlayStation.com/Amazon for all of your shopping. No clotheslines and headlines this week, guys. The first one we're missing, actually, Scott, but we will have an update on what's going on there next week. We'll cover that. We'll talk about it more here maybe next Monday. New Letters from Center Stage dropped last Friday, and the new one coming out this Friday is going to reveal our special guest from WCW that will be joining us in the near future, and we call for action for letters, for emails, for tweets, submitting questions for this wrestler. Very synonymous with the era of WCW that we're covering. So we're excited to have him. He'll be joining us soon on an episode, and we want to go out and solicit some questions for him. So more on that, of course, this Friday on the new Letters from Center Stage. Also, episode 2 of Jeff Learns Wrestling dropped last weekend as well. We are setting back the clock chronologically to January of 84, and we're going to move forward through things that way. So we touched on Hogan Sheik, we touched on WrestleMania 1, the war to settle the score. Jeff's mind is blown by all the rock and wrestling celebrity stuff, so it's a really fun podcast if you haven't checked it out. My buddy Jeff has never watched wrestling, never been a fan, and he's learning it now at age 36 as I walk him through it like he's an 8-year-old. So it's a lot of fun. Be sure to check that out. Anything you want to plug, Scott?
No. The last main event was last week. We previewed the weekend stuff, so check out if you didn't watch NXT TakeOver or Backlash. Compare with what we did last week. And check out all the great stuff on PlaceBNation.com. You could still donate to the Sword and Shield Golf Classic. The post is up on the site, PlaceBNation.com. All donations go to our charitable, many of our charitable groups. And we thank you for your support. So please, anything is welcome. Thank you ahead of time.
Indeed. Get those contributions in. Golf Classics coming up soon. Also, PlaceMe Nation's first birthday, listen to me, fourth birthday, right? It's coming up very soon. 13 to 14, 14 to 15, 15 to 16, 16 to 17. Yeah, fourth birthday. Coming up soon on June 1st, Scott, along with your 52nd birthday. So we'll be celebrating both of those things.
Yes, D'Amato and I were 39 during WrestleMania 2. Yeah.
We'll be celebrating both of those things on June 1st. So thank you, as always, for all of your support. And thank you, Pete, for joining us. We'll have you back in the very near future, I'm sure. Whenever Kelly gets married again, you can pop back in. Kelly will be back in 2 weeks as well once we get back to the house show circuit. For the boys, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week. D'Amato in the house, WrestleMania 2. Talk to you then. Take care.
Mr. Dump.